Welcome to episode Muse on Minis 192.
Musing and amusing.
This is Keith, and I play Crix.
Nigel Cador.
This is Chad, and I play Trolls.
This is Josh Merks.
Sorry, this is John, and I play Protector Domenoth. I just held off a sneeze, which is why I did that.
Nice.
Also, I'm sick, so I'm probably going to be an a-hole.
Join the club.
Got you guys good.
Screw you, Chad.
Son of a bitch.
We're traveling in like 3 days.
Yeah,
enjoy to the that. WTC.
Enjoy that. Speaking of the WTC, actually, news and announcements. There's some things to talk about. Did you guys mention that we've confirmed that all of the Jack pictures that were spoiled are going to be Character War Jacks?
I mean, I think.
Is that something that we've talked about?
Probably not.
Every faction is getting a new Character War Jack.
I thought we did, but meh.
And they threw up a post specifically about the Signar one. The Signar one's model has been previewed. It is for Sebastian Nemo. It sounds like it's going to be a ranged, dedicated warjack, although it has what looks like a lighter.
I didn't get the impression that it was for Nemo. I just got the impression that he made it.
That he built it?
Yeah.
So that may be the case.
It might have had a bond to him, though. Maybe.
Yeah, there isn't currently an affinity or bond for Nemo, right?
Isn't there?
Mm-mm.
Isn't? No, no, Thunderhead's not. No.
Thunderhead isn't.
Oh, okay, interesting.
It seems pretty likely it'll be a Nemo Jack.
Yeah, because he's got a hand in so many
jacks. The reason why in this case I think it will have some special relationship to Nemo is because in its fluff blur they mentioned that it's his field test warjack that has lasted the longest.
Huh.
And that, in their own fluff, is how bonds develop, is from repeated
right.
use.
All right, well. Ignore so me, then.
It's
Go
called
on.
The Dynamo.
Yeah, it's called Dynamo.
Done and done.
And it sounds like it certainly has a multiple rate of fire gun, and it sounds like that gun increases in power with each subsequent hit.
I think that there's multiple ways of interpreting the fluff blurb. I actually really liked the fluff blurb for this one because it was like, ooh, like you can kind of get some ideas. But
the gun sounds like it's either an AoE or has an electroleap potential to it since it decimates like groups of infantry.
I figure AoE or an AP.
The other interpretation of that was that that applies to its melee weapon since it uses the kinetic force.
Right. Yeah. That was how I also interpreted it, was that the melee weapon would increase in power with each hit.
I thought it was the gun.
No, it's in a set. I mean, it doesn't actually say. It just says the Jack's attacks.
It says harnessing its kinetic force, though.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It made it sound like the melee weapon. I agree.
Gotcha, gotcha.
But, I mean, it could be like Signar's first spray, right?
I doubt it, but it could be.
If it was like a range 10 spray.
Arlen Strangeway's got a spray.
Does.
And then the Scatter Gunner, Master Trencher, Scatter Gunners.
Boom, not the first spray.
On a Jack, sorry.
Oh.
Well, now that you've clarified.
Although, is he on the Centurion chassis?
No.
No.
Because it kind of looks like a Centurion
it
body.
It does a little bit, but.
It does a bit, but.
Because then it would be base 6-4, right?
Yep.
Well, with character upgrades, but.
Right, but I'm just saying.
Like, I mean, it'll actually be 7-5 if it's character, right?
Not necessarily. It could be like 6-6. They sometimes do stuff like that, or. If it's primarily like a range jack, or it might be like
my only real character is Rothanante, so as far as I'm concerned, you always get +1/+1, and then -1 armor.
Always.
Now, usually it's +1 to their primary stat.
Yeah.
So it's just a question of which they consider it to be.
Yeah. But I think what everyone's speculating at this point in time is that he's got a lightning generator gun, like the Storm Troll, or he's got two ammo types, rather, that he chooses from between either the lightning generator gun like the Storm Troll or some kind of
AP
higher power attack, either AP or just high power.
Just high power, yeah.
Like maybe it's just like a defender or something like that.
Could be.
Or maybe it has a... This would be a new rule. no, I don't know. Maybe it just does more damage to... Like, rolling, like, maybe it's got erosion or something like that.
You could also pull out a version of, like, the modulator's gun. The draw line and everything in between it gets automatically hit.
That's another way to interpret it, I guess, too.
Yeah.
Plausible.
And then, yeah, it sounds like he gets more powerful every time he attacks in melee or
shoots.
It sounds like it's probably going to be really good.
It's randomly possible he could have, like, multiple rate of fire and that the gun increases in power. Like, that is another way to interpret the kinetic energy. Mm-hmm. It was like rate of fire 3 and the gun gets stronger as he fires.
Then we saw the Crix Jack, right? Whose Jack do you think that is?
We don't have a fluff blurb for it yet.
I know. I'm just curious, just looking at it, if you had an idea.
Scabrous.
It's got like shovel hands and... Doesn't Scabrous, doesn't he have it?
He already has a Jack.
Yeah, he's got Erebus.
Oh, then the other one that's crappy.
Venothrax. Dynamo is the most successful of Sebastian Demo's many prototype warjacks, the one that has survived extensive use in the field. Powered by its galvanic generator, Dynamo is outfitted to render electrical destruction via its devastating storm cannon. This weapon fires deadly bolts of lightning that can strike clusters of advancing soldiers or concentrated to melt heavy armor to slag. Thanks to Dynamo's ability to harness and channel its own kinetic energy, each attack it unleashes is more deadly than the last. Interesting. So yeah, it can. So it's just a question of what does it harness all that kinetic energy for? And it's chassis, looking at it, it doesn't look particularly similar to either of the existing chassis.
I thought it kind of looked Centurion-based because it's kind of round.
I mean, it's not a storm wall, so it's probably irrelevant anyway.
Well, Nemo doesn't really take storm walls.
I mean, I've seen some storm wall on some Nemo list. I've seen it.
Though
I haven't
Nemo?
Seen many Nemo lists, honestly. Yeah. Which blows my mind, because whenever I look at Signar, I'm like, Kane seems cool, Haley seems boring, and Nemo seems awesome.
I would play Nemo 1.
Nemo 1 and Nemo 2 both seem sweet.
I probably wouldn't play Nemo 3.
I'd play 3.
I might.
I'd play the hell out of 3.
I'd play the crap out of it.
He's like, this guy has a janky assassination that works about 30% of the time. All in.
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah. Does Gorshin have a name, Jack?
No. Maybe Gorshin. I could see it.
I could see it, too.
Wait, who's Jack really... is Nightmare?
Denegro.
Who's Jack is...
Death Jack.
Nobody.
I know.
Canker Spanks is Asphyxius.
Yep. Asphyxius, and then there's one other, right?
Nope. Oh, Malice is unassociated.
There's Erebus and Malice.
Malice has no association.
And Erebus is Scabrous's?
Yep.
I'm going with Venothrax. Yep. This Jack is Venothrax's.
Those shovel hands are there to protect the thighs.
Exactly. Exactly.
So we saw previews for other Jacks, so it makes more sense now because there was the Retribution Light that clearly was...
Gareth's
Jack.
Yep. And then it's a Berserker in Kador, is that right?
That was my impression, is it's a Berserker dude.
But Vlad already has a Jack, right?
Drago. He already has a Berserker.
Who doesn't have a Jack?
Butcher.
Lots of people.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's like 7 character Jacks in Kador.
There's not.
There's one for Hamkovich. Yeah.
There's Torch.
Torch is...
Drago.
Strakov. Drago, Vlad.
The Beast of Nine.
Sorcha.
Behemoth, who obviously is not attached.
Unaffiliated.
Scrapjack.
Old Pooter.
Oh, yeah, I guess Kator has +1 over everybody else because of the...
Scrapjack,
yeah. Otherwise, I think, as far
and
as I know...
Black Ivan for...
Black Ivan.
All the War Machine factions have the same number of character jacks, I think.
Yep.
Except for Mercs. And Rhett, obviously.
Yeah. So, this Berserker will be Butcher's?
That's my
Butcher
guess.
Butcher or Karchev?
I suppose it could be Karchev.
Ooh, Karchev.
Although it's unlikely, considering Karchev is sort of MIA at the moment, so they can't really tell stories about it.
Yeah, and I think it's actively looking... It looks like it'd be a bad one for him anyways.
And then... Protectorates was something with a flamer.
I'm guessing Fira.
She doesn't have one yet? Is it like just a bunch of light arc nodes for a bunch of... Is that mostly the character jacks?
No, not at all. There's Fire of Salvation, which is Kreas's jack. There is Blessing of Vengeance, which is what you're thinking of, the arc node, which is Sevi's jack. There is
Blood of Martyrs,
which is Fire's jack. Scourge of Heresy, which is Resnick's jack. Is that all of them?
Unaffiliated Avatar.
Yeah. I think that's all of them.
Yes. So that's, I think, all there is in news. Nothing really else popped out.
I guess there was quasi-spoilers for the Beetle.
The what?
The Scorn Beetle.
I missed that.
I didn't see that either.
I also did not see it.
Oh, I heard something about that. It's supposed to be like a spitter, right?
Well, so there's three. There's going to be three beetles. It's going to be like a three-beast kit, and it'll... There's the a spinner version. There's a version that's going to have two reach attacks that pulls you in and has the bite attacks that have three base attacks. They're all going to be armor 20 in the butt or 22 in the butt. Maybe it's 22. I think they're armor
3.
What's that?
23 is what they said.
Oh, yeah, 23.
What?
Sorry.
In
it's
the back.
Super weird spoilers. I don't
so,
know if I
so
trust
when you take
them.
When you take a freeze strike, it'll be armor 23, but otherwise it's armor 18 or armor 19.
19.
Oh. That's interesting.
Yeah. Where are these spoilers?
I don't know.
They were on the forums for a little bit and they got
We also heard random weird spoilers about Braddock's theme force. Did you guys see that?
Oh yeah, yeah, the ambushing dudes. Yeah.
Talk about it too much, but it sounds pretty. It sounds good.
It sounds good, but actually no, it just sounds good.
Yeah, ambushing what?
Because it's basically black clad wayfarers.
Yeah.
First of all, the first level bonus for the supposedly spoiled theme force, and I want to give like the biggest grain of salt possible with this because I don't personally believe it. I think it's possible, but I don't personally believe it. Like I think it's BS. Because it's basically everything that he would like. It's everything that he wants to take.
Yep.
Like minus Megaliths.
And
so it's non-character wolds, and then druid units and
stones.
Stones, right? Did you see it?
No, but you said everything he wants to take minus Megaliths.
Stones.
So, yeah.
Well, stones would be a druid unit anyway if they put the druid guy.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's right. Additional UA for the druids, right? Was one of the
that's
bonuses.
One of them. One of the theme bonuses was free, a free stone keeper UA that ignores FA.
What?
So
the first theme force bonus is Blackclad Wayfarers become FAU, and one of the other theme force bonuses was you can ambush your Blackclad Wayfarers.
Also, minus one cost to heavy wolds, right?
Yeah. Heavy wolds getting minus
there's
one.
There's no way.
Yeah,
it's just
much,
like
no.
I mean, it's basically someone was like, it sounds like fan fiction, basically.
Yeah, it's what four tiers do I want the most for this guy? Yeah. Okay, it's totally okay because no megalith.
Yeah, exactly.
And no Una Quicken Chicken.
Yeah, I feel like Una Quicken Chicken is kind of something that he really, really badly wants to have.
That's not a druid unit. Una Quicken Chicken.
No, it isn't.
Yeah. I also find the concept that there's like a new chassis with three different options in a book to be fairly unlikely. It just seems weird that they'd be like, here's three new heavies for you.
Well, a beetle would be a great chassis to do it on. I mean, they've already done it. There's other plastics, you know, it wouldn't be the first kit, but then a beetle would be a great one to like. There'd be like a He-Man.
But then they're getting like three new heavy war beasts, a war beast pack. Like it just doesn't seem.
I could see it for a faction that wasn't getting a war beast pack because they have started to do more non-symmetrical releases for each faction.
Yeah,
like some are getting beast packs, some aren't.
My theory is that they're going to do them dirty, like they did Kadar, which is they released the Grolar technically on paper, but you're not going to get the Grolar until the other two come out in the next book. Yay! So then Scorn will get this like one beetle in this book. And then they'll have two more to wait for in the next book, and they'll sit and never get their model.
Yeah,
it'll
like
be Scorn.
Awesome. Scorn is the Kador of Hordes.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they're like all red.
I mean, that's happened to every War Machine faction. They've all been given a Warjack that they can't have yet. Just nobody but Kador.
I just want
cares.
The Beetle to come out
exactly
like 4 months before the Grolar does now. Like just to
all four beetles, yeah.
Take this, Kador players. Ha ha.
So, after news and announcements, we do have some WTC lists that we intend to talk about today. We finally were biting the bullet, talking about some WTC lists. We found some that piqued our interest.
So I looked through all of the WTC lists. There's like 500 of them. And I was basically just looking with an eye towards lists that I thought were interesting or non-standard, stuff that we could just talk about in terms of, you know, people don't usually play this caster or people don't usually play these things with this caster or just, you know, random, like, little weird modules. There's not as many as you would think. I just wanted to kind of go over a couple of things that I went through my head, like, as I was looking through all of these lists and that, like, there are a lot of really good lists that I think, like, it occurred to me, like, as I'm looking through lists a lot, like, I was just like, oh, that's a good list. Oh, that's a good list, too. There's also not a lot of variety. among a lot of the teams. Like, there's, like, small variations. This is something that John was mentioning before the cast and something that people mentioned on our forums regarding our episode last week, where we would, like, kind of write off a caster. We would write off a list sort of immediately after we would read the caster and then realize, you know, oh, well, there's double rakes in this Veil 2 list. Like, that's a little strange. Like, I don't really consider that super strange personally. That's, I feel like, really within the realm of, like, stuff that you would see with her. Like, what I would find interesting is if, like, there was a Veil 2 list with, you know, Legionnaires, or not Legionnaires, or, you know, something like Swordsmen or something like that. I'm not saying it would be good, but...
It would be significantly... A list that would play in a significantly different fashion from how you usually see a list played.
Yeah, exactly. And so I was kind of trying to look through an eye, with an eye towards that. And I came up with a couple... So let's just go ahead and pull these lists up, I guess.
Point us in the direction. Which team?
Australia Gold. They actually had two, and maybe it's just because it was the first, and I was not yet jaded.
As an aside, I think Australia Gold is probably going to do pretty well at the WTC.
Better than Australia Green.
What's the web address of the where I can get all the lists?
John sent us all an email.
Dang it. I had it open last week. I must have.
Okay, so...
Which player?
Jeff Trache is one of his lists. I wanted to look at his Gristle 1 list. So this is a Gristle 1 list that I think it just kind of caught my eye because... It's kind of Gristle 1. It's got the double warders, which a lot of people would say is not interesting. But what I thought was interesting is it's kind of playing a little bit towards the solo spam side of things for Gristle 1, which I think is actually kind of... I think it's interesting. Just like running the two Felcallers and two Kithcars with a Mauler to put the Mauler Animus on them. Those Kithcar get up to power plus strength 16 and 3 attacks on her feet. And then on the feet turn, they can, like, still reposition and everything like that. And when you can't charge them and they're armor 19 with 8 HP and immune to collateral damage and stuff, they're kind of a pain.
Looks like he's intending to cast Calamity fairly frequently, too. I see the
Bone Grinders.
Bone Grinders aren't included.
No Axer for the Earthborn, and the Mauler is... Surprising.
The Mauler... So my take on that is just the Mauler is literally just going to be a buff bot. Like, he's literally just going to cast his Animus, and he's there just so she can cast his Animus. Earthborn already has Pathfinder. Like, the beasts aren't going to come out and get you in this list, you know?
Yeah.
Like any standard Gristle list. Like, I'm the way I envision it is, like, the beasts are going to be behind
the
warders.
Yeah.
And then once you kill the warders, then the beasts are going to come into you, you know? I mean, it's like any Gristle list. Like, you're not going to go out and get them... You're gonna, but then it also gives you a good, like, Maulers and Earthborns aren't terrible targets for Hallowed Avenger, which is a spell that I almost never cast when I play Gristle. You know, like, you probably don't even know what it does.
Yeah, I do.
Do you, Josh?
Yeah, if you kill a model within 5 inches of the model with Hallowed Avenger on it, then the Hallowed Avenger model gets to make an advance and attack.
Nope.
Charge.
You, yeah. Suck it, Josh.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
But, and it's the solos sort of allow for it to be played similarly to the Gristle 2 version, which is to let them move past engagement by just having, like, a Kithcar come in and clean some warders off rather than just dash. Because you can't dash past without free strikes in Gristle 1. So Felcaller sprays or Kithcars coming in with their reach weapons will be able to do some work that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's similar in some ways to your Gristle 1 list, with the exception of it's instead of that unit of champions, it's like so the unit of solos instead.
Yeah, which I don't know. I kind of like it. I think it's interesting at least.
Not charging those solos means they're going to be there for a lot longer than you would expect.
Also, both Felcallers and Kithcar have two attacks, and so with the Mauler Animus and then Calamity, like on a heavy. If they get the extra attack, any one of those, you know, solos can just potentially, like, wreck a heavy by itself, essentially. I'm not sure that heavies... Like, I mean, it's interesting because one of the... Like, heavies are kind of one of the weaknesses of Gristle 1 since they don't get affected by Cacophony. And then that gives you a little bit of a rubber banding effect against that because you can kind of, you know, put rage on two Felcallers and then pop your feet, and those two Falcaulias are going to kill a Jack now, probably.
Yep.
Yeah, also, it's very difficult to trade up on that list. Because a lot of the stuff that you need to kill is going to be pretty hard to kill.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, we've talked about it for probably enough. We got a few lists to go through. We can move on. So the next one that I pointed out was, and it's from the same team, Chris Davies playing Kador. His Irisk 2 list, it's his first list listed, I thought was pretty interesting. It's a style of Irisk 2 that I have seen theorized quite a bit, but I haven't seen on the table too much.
Valachev Risen, I'm already in.
Yeah, that's what I really like. Valachev Risen, so Valachev Risen, double Pikeman, double Black Dragon, and then a lot of the stuff that you would just kind of plan on seeing, like Winter Guard.
So 40 IFP.
Winter Guard Mortar. What?
40 IFP then?
20.
20.
Oh, I thought you said double Black Dragon, double IFP.
No, it's just double black dragon
IFP.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, that's why I got lost.
So yeah, both of those with the two Kovniks.
Like, we're excited about Valachev Alexia just because Alexia with +3 inches of charge is sweet. Is that the deal?
It's not +3 inches of charge.
Well, it's because all of the Risen gain, like, everything gains tough for being within 10 inches of Iris. They all gain Martial Discipline.
Yeah.
Which is sweet.
Yeah.
Tough.
Go ahead.
I mean, it's just his whole army is basically. So the way I see it is,
well, the whole point with Alexia is so he can battle Luster.
Yeah. And battle Luster Alexia.
She'll just one shot stuff.
Pretty sick.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
So yeah, carry on.
Well, and then also the 10 or the 20 IFP that are all immune to knockdown and tough.
Yep.
I don't know.
Sounds like a battle less bonanza, basically.
That's yeah. You kind of want to make his list like that, or just tease off on Battlelust.
And he just went for a Juggernaut bonded, which I'm not 100% certain of, because he does have, he almost has enough guns in there to keep people honest, but I'm not quite sure he does. Because he's got a unit of Widowmakers, Iris 2, and one Mortar crew, which a Mortar is a pretty good target for fire for effect. But with the Juggernaut in there, it's for a couple more points, you could get into a Warjack that helps.
The Juggernaut is another one of the reasons why I picked this list, because I was just like,
advance your ranged game.
But anyway.
What's his bond?
It's +2 defense and immune knockdown, remember?
Oh, right. Yeah, I do remember.
So let's move on to... So those are not
I'd probably,
the most interesting. But
if I were to tweak it, I would find some point somewhere and get it up to a Decimator. I just love the Decimator with him.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only time I'd ever use that Jack, and it's like super sweet for him. And he's got the War Dog in there, and this type of list, the War Dog's not critical.
Mm-hmm.
So he's almost a point. He's almost got his point there. But anyways, here, let's move on to where.
No, yeah, I liked it because Valachev seems like such a quality thing. Like for Kador, they want him.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere.
Yeah, and in a million different places. And it's always talked about as like, you know, oh, Valachev on Alexia, that'd be pretty sweet with Iris too, but then you never actually see it.
Just so to make sure we don't get blown up for this, does Martial Discipline actually affect the Risen, or is it living models only? I thought it was living models only.
No, it's warrior models. Martial Discipline is warrior models.
Yeah, it's the tough one I think might be the living, but I'm not sure.
I knew something was missed because people have been like, yeah, Valachev Alexia with Irisk 2 is a waste, and I was trying to remember why.
The other reason why it's really good is she can, like, walk up, take a boosted main cannon shot. She's also not a bad person for fire for effect either in her own right, even though she can just spend 2 dead guys. But she can walk up 6, back up 6 with Zephyr and Tactical Supremacy, so that's kind of cool. I don't know, she does all kinds of weird stuff.
So next up, we got Team Austria White. They had a Merc player playing Ostrom with a list.
No Earthbreaker?
No, it did have an Earthbreaker.
Oh, weird.
It also has a Galleon with Gaston, which I thought was pretty non-standard.
I wonder why.
So you can cycle snipe.
Cycle snipe, and then also Gaston's living.
Yes, Martial Discipline does only affect living.
Yep. Really?
Yes.
Hmm.
And Total Obedience also only affects living.
Yeah.
So weird. Only the
both effects do not go for the Risen.
Yeah, she's still good
weird.
Though.
Battlelust is pretty sweet.
Yeah, Battlelust is amazing.
Battlelust is.
That is weird, though.
I really thought it was just warrior models.
Huh. Interesting.
Friendly, living, faction, warrior models.
for Marshall this one.
Yep. Yep.
You saved us, Keith. We almost got blown up.
Such a blow up.
Rinth always is gentle about it.
Yeah, this Ostrom list is interesting. Ostrom with an Earthbreaker, Ironden Holt, P. Iris, Gaston and the Galleon, Goblin Tinker, Gormund the Wolf, Dougal, and Thor. I mean, it's obviously just like an all-in assassination list.
I've seen, because whenever I saw Earthbreaker Galleon, it was always with Durgan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because his feat is significantly better for the pair.
Is it?
Well, yeah, because Ostrom's feat does nothing for the Galleon, whereas Durgan's feat will boost the attack roll, boost all of the Galleon's attack and damage roll.
I feel like
damage.
Snipe might.
Yeah, rotating Snipe.
Like
Snipe's
could,
good.
Could make up for it.
Snipe's real strong.
I mean, the Galleon already has good range, and with Gaston, it actually has +2, so it's well, got 16 inches. Six. Yeah, for sure.
Did you say he had Dougal, too, right?
Yeah, he's got Dougal for the Dougal and Thor.
For +8.
Yeah, and then Ayana and Holt. Like, it's definitely just an asset. Like, particularly given that Ostrom does literally nothing to keep enemy models from the... And people always ask me why I had Boom Howlers for a while in the Ostrom list, because they're like, oh, Ostrom doesn't do anything for Boom Howlers. And I'm like, yeah, except the Boom Howlers do a lot for the Earthbreaker by buying it a bunch of time to... And then Martial Discipline's also sweet with him. But in the case of this list, he's just going to have... He's going to have, like, two turns, basically, to play with.
I question the inclusion here of those two tankers, it being what looks like a really, really hard push for assassination.
Yeah.
I would probably rather see that be Taran De La Ravisi.
Yeah.
If you're looking for a long game, I would rather see it be Ralik Moorclaw, someone who can reactivate
the Galleon. P. Iris also indicates to me that this is 100%. Like assassination, like the ability to like knock down with the Earthbreaker, B. Iris shoots off your focus, Galleon kills. Because otherwise, I would also potentially want to see like a Bogren Bokur or something to protect Gaston if you were playing for the late game. But I don't think that I do agree that Tinkers are slightly out of place. Yeah. For the list, but
no, I mean my experience with P. Haley has told me that it's not impossible. It's not actually even that difficult to protect Gaston for a long period of time. You just have to be able to.
I mean, she's better at it than Ostrom is.
You have to have elements that protect him. Like, she's got the spell reduction, which I've ended up not really using very much. Mostly, it's just her ability to keep the line of scrimmage back with Temporal Barrier.
And he, unfortunately, can't do it. He does have a Bullet Dodger he can slap on Gaston, which is, you know, makes him def 16 versus shooting, which is something.
All right, we can probably move on. So, next up, we had from Finland White, Tattoo. Was playing a Butcher 3 list that I actually really like. It's definitely like one that immediately stands out as being like, whoa, that's weird. That's non-standard. You know, that's not what you normally see. So the list is...
Butcher 2, 3. That's an interesting pair.
Yeah. So the list is Butcher 3, 4 Devastators, a War Dog, Widowmakers, Epic Iris, Gorman, Kel, Madeline, Corbeau, Orin Midwinter, and a Marksman.
Is the Devastator the Clam Jack with the Bombards?
Yep.
Okay. No, the Devastator is the one that just, he Rain of Deaths.
Rain of Deaths.
Right. The original
Clam. Clam. So it seems to me like this list is designed to try to allow the Butcher to do as much of the work as possible, and then the Devastators just sort of form up around him.
Yep.
To try to protect him after he's moved in.
And it's just a scenario bully list, too, so he can play safe while they just go and
bulldoze stuff.
Yeah.
No clouds.
Energizer is pretty funny with those guys.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, no clouds, just armor 25 Warjacks.
Yeah, you don't need clouds. You just got 4 Devastators to hide behind.
I suppose that's true.
It's a pretty good way to deliver Butcher. I mean, that's old school. We used to deliver...
The only thing is, is there anything that makes them run for free? Or do they have heavy boilers?
No.
They do not, no.
I mean, it's bad against slams, right? Like, that's why I never like protecting my casters with... Warjacks in front of me, because...
Not if you lay it out right. It's not too bad.
Yeah.
He's got Gorman, so there's a cloud.
Fair enough.
But yeah, I don't know. I have no idea whether this list is any good or not, but when I was reading it, I was just like, whoa.
Yeah, 4 Devastators.
4 Devastators. That's a lot of armor 25.
It's a lot of devastation.
And it's going to do a deceptive amount of work against the infantry, because it's got the 4 Widowmakers, Kel Balok, a Marksman... Orin, Eris, so like he can snipe down the majority of a unit every turn.
Yeah,
I'd like to see just as a thought of just mechanics in there would have been pretty sweet. That marksman is a guy who could sneak out and you could put in a four. Kadoran mechanics are amazing. Devastators with armor 25, if you're playing against like a range game, it's like backbreaking when they try to sandpaper you down and you just can't. Mm-hmm. And it's four models that are a half a point each that have to be prioritized. Like people then have like wasting time killing these like defense 15, armor 15 or 14. They're 15, 14s when they're touching a Devastator. So like, yeah. Anyways, it's just a little add I would have done to enhance the list a little bit. But
mm-hmm. I'd be interested to see what kind of lists this plays against successfully, allowing the Butcher to do that much work. Because that's kind of how I would want to play him. Because he's we've always said like the Butcher is kind of the epitome of what everyone thinks they're getting into when they get into War Machine. It's just mm-hmm. one where he's like, I just pick my favorite guy and he kills everything. Yeah. So it'd be neat to see that playstyle effect or put into play.
You get a lot of interesting shenanigans potentially with Bulldoze.
Yeah, that much Bulldoze and Energizer.
Yeah, that's true.
Especially with Energizer, yeah.
Well, and then also the Butcher has also more shenanigans too with
Impending Doom.
God, yeah. Mm-hmm. You like Bulldoze a guy from the first Devastator, Bulldoze him again, and then have the Butcher Impending Doom him, and mm-hmm. like you can just be like...
I'm just saying you can do interesting things.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's interesting. Like that. Like that's the kind of list I was looking for. There's surprisingly not very many of them this year.
Yeah. It's actually a pretty high concept list, if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's...
I wonder which is his primary list. I'm guessing it's that the Mad Dogs of War.
The Doom Reaver
Spam. Yeah.
Reaver Spam. And then... Oh, he's playing the Extreme Reavers version, too. Where it's just, there's no Conquest. I think I like it better with Conquest. Anyway, we've talked about that list a lot.
it's interesting. So next
that
up.
That does make for, just talking about the pair a little bit, that does make for kind of a like a serious conundrum sitting down across from him. You're like, oh, is he going to drop the list that's nothing but infantry or the one with four armor 25 war jets? Well,
and it's interesting because both lists can handle, I mean, they both can handle infantry or warjacks.
That's true.
Yeah. The other thing that's awesome is he's got, never mind. I was just going to assume that he had the, never mind. I was a crackhead.
Okay.
It's funny. It's almost the same list pairing I used to do with Epic Doomshaper, Epic Madrak. It's like a bunch of Weapon Masters with Epic Madrak, and then a bunch of like Armor 23 plus War Beasts with Epic Doomshaper. Enjoy your list selection process.
Good
I know
times.
I will. Occasionally I did not. next up from Hungary Red, I thought that Zoltan Gal, is that how you pronounce that? Zoltan?
That is like name it is epic as hell.
I think it should be Zoltan.
Zoltan. Well, yeah. It's also written in all capitals.
I think, Zoltan.
Zoltan Gal.
So his epic Denegra list I thought was fairly interesting. It's a lot of standard fare, and then it's also got Iakos running a Kraken.
An Iakos Kraken. Epic Denegra is an interesting pick for an Iakos Kraken. Not probably the one I would first reach for, but, I mean, her feat does give it some extra time to just sort of go nuts.
What does Iakos do again?
Mobility?
Okay.
Or, sorry, Escort.
Escort. And he's also stealth. So he
himself is
still. Oh, yeah. In regards to that, I was just trying to think about it for the Kraken. Mobility is good.
The other thing is he can activate
or Escort, rather.
Two cost spell that gives his battle group Grievous Wounds.
That's also pretty good.
That's pretty gross.
Actually,
if you get locked down by Denegra's feet,
allows the Kraken to tear down tar pits really quick.
Is it only to its melee weapons?
Melee weapons.
Okay, all right. Because I was just like, actually, if that's to guns, that's like the grossest thing I can think of against Hordes. That's just...
No, but I'm just saying, like, the Kraken can get with that 4 inches of reach.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
After they're locked down for a turn.
That's what I mean. Like, they lock you down and then position the Kraken so that they can just go in the Grievous Wounds.
Also, he can give four focus to the Kraken that Denegra doesn't... Or whatever. He can give three focus to the Kraken that Denegra doesn't have to worry about to make it harder to one-shot that bee.
Yep.
That's true.
She can camp more or make liberal use of Hellmouth, which is incredibly powerful.
And having a huge base for her to retreat behind on the turns that she's not incorporeal is pretty sweet. And she can walk on the turn she isn't incorporeal. She can walk all the way out in front of it and then just
stupid speed 7.
Zip back behind it the next
turn. I agree. Why is she speed 7? She's dead.
So, yeah. Well, I'd never seen that before. I'd never even seen talk of putting a Kraken on Iakos. So
it's actually really smart. I like it a lot.
Yeah, definitely.
Helps your hordes match up.
So next up on Ireland Creole, I wanted to talk about Stu, a.k.a. Anto's Calandra list. No, really nothing?
Oh, and
you, Keith?
Kieran.
Sorry, Stu. So his Calandra list, I kind of like it a lot.
Peter Croft, where's Jerry?
He's on the other island team.
You traitors. Abandoning Jerry.
Maybe Jerry abandons them. You don't know.
Stupid Stu's not
I don't
even...
want to be on the crack anyway.
How's Stu, who's not even Irish, on their first team, and they abandon Jerry? Who's the most Irish person I've ever met.
I also told Kieran that I'd make sure to talk this week about how much more awesome he is than Stu. So there you go. So this Calandra list, I actually really like it. And it's super weird.
Dahlia.
The list is Bomber Impaler, Dahlia and Skyrath, Witch Doc Croc, Victor Pendrake, Felcaller, Janissa, Nis Hunters, Burrowers, and a Stone.
Stone isn't doing a lot in this list.
It's a lot. It's very similar to Jason Flanzer's Pegrim list that he took to Lock and Load last year. But you kind of swap the Nis Hunters out for, or you kind of swap the Scattergunners out for the Nis Hunters. And then, I guess it's, and then you swap the Fenblades out for the Burrowers and then some additional solos. But Dahlia and Skyrath, I think that they're probably just really good with Calandra in general. Because
Starcross stacks on them really
good. Yeah, she's def 16 and Skyrath is def 14. So Starcross is just really good for them. The spray is just good. It's just a good spray. And then
Haunting Melody is really
right.
good.
I think Dahlia could be played a lot more in the current meta than she is. Like, I've been looking at her. Haunting Melody is just incredibly good. So
her weakness is guns that come from down. Basically gun mages, right?
Right.
Yeah. Kind of. I mean, he's got Janissa, so that can make it a lot harder to kill her.
Yeah, def 20 is not something that's easy to shoot into.
And then she's also probably going to be standing next to Calandra, too, for most of the game.
I mean, it could be def 20 and Starcrossed.
Yeah.
Is Bullet Dodger friendly? You could even Bullet Dodger her if you want. But then she could be Haunting Melody.
Not positive.
I don't think it is. I mean, you wouldn't want to do that anyway, because Haunting Melody is too good.
Yeah.
It's an upkeep?
Yeah, it's her only upkeep.
I thought you had to hard cast it every turn for, two or something.
I don't think so.
It's an upkeep. She has another spell she can hard cast to make to give her battle group's prowl, I think.
This list definitely has an assassination that can come for you if you're not careful.
Yep.
It's got a strong ranged presence. And it seems, I mean, with the inclusion of Pendrake, it seems quite tuned for coming after hordes.
Yeah,
hordes people.
I almost wish that Pendrake was Bone Grinders instead. Just to enable,
2 inches on Force Blow?
Yeah, just to give Force Blow like a 12-inch range. Because then you could really get people with that assassination. But anyway, I don't think we probably need to talk about this for much longer. I thought that was a little bit of a weird-looking list. Dahlia, we've been seeing her a little bit more lately, ever since last year Lock and Load, or last year War Machine Weekend. I think I said Lock and Load earlier.
Yeah.
Meant War Machine Weekend.
Last chance.
Yep. But I think that she could probably be played more.
Stu does not understand the power that is the
Stonescribe Chronicler.
Stonescribe Chronicler.
I know.
You fool.
So next up, we do have Jerry's list from Ireland Craic.
Jerry.
Crack. It's the crack.
Okay. I'm sorry for insulting your crack.
Where's the crack? It means where's the fun? Where's the party?
Good.
Yeah.
I learned something today.
Yeah.
Callus.
Yeah. So when I was looking through these lists, basically every time I hit a Legion player, I would just immediately scoop past them. Vale 2, Saren, seen enough.
Mm-hmm.
And for him, Callus right
that
away.
That is the smallest Legion battle group I've seen in my entire life.
Yeah, right?
Shredder, Stinger, huh?
It's just filling his War Beast points.
Yep.
I've never seen that before.
I had a rice list that did that.
So this is Legion Infantry Spam.
This is what I always am like, Legion Infantry seems really good. Why don't I see more Legion Infantry? Now we're seeing it.
Well, I mean, I think it's probably not bad between Dark Guidance and Ignite.
I 100% don't think it's bad. I am legitimately serious when I'm like, why don't I ever see like Kallus lists with Legion or Legion Infantry? Because Legion Infantry is good. Mm-hmm. It's legitimately good.
I'm very curious how this list would do, or I'm curious to see someone play it. So we have, so the whole list is actually, it's Jerry Nolan's Legion Kallus list from Island Crack. Kallus, Shredder, Stinger is his battle group, and that's it. Then he's got two Deathstalkers, a Witch Doctor, minimum unit of Bogtrog Ambushers, full Legionnaires with Standard, full Swordsmen with UA, Spawning Vessel, and then Boker and Swamp Shamblers, and full unit of Hex Hunters. That's a lot of infantry.
And there's a lot of recursion coming at you in this, too.
Yep. Does Dark Guidance work on the Bogtrogs?
No.
It does not.
Okay.
Ignite can go there.
Ignite's pretty good.
Yeah.
His other stuff doesn't work, like his feet and none of his abilities, I think, work,
we'll
on,
work on the Bogtrogs.
Except for Ignite. Okay. But Ignite's pretty good on them.
But yeah. Between his feet's recursion, the pot, which has, like, is just going to be, it's going to be crapping out something every single turn of the game.
It's going to be too busy.
And then the Gatorman Boker picking up after the pot stops, probably. That's making pretty good use of all those.
Legionnaires are fairly hard to kill on his feet turn, right?
They're really hard to kill on his feet turn, especially if it's also their feet turn.
Right. So I'm assuming that, yeah, he'd probably jam up with the Legionnaires, have the Swordsmen following closely behind them. Or maybe, like, I guess the Hex Hunters are advanced to play, right? So they're probably front line.
Flanking.
I mean, his feet turn is a really, it's a pretty decent deterrent.
Yeah, you don't want to make a bunch of incubi.
Unless you're coming in with multiple attacks, yeah.
Are the Hex Hunters the one that have the Bail UA, is that?
Yeah, Bial. Actually, Bial might give them advanced deploy. I don't know if they advanced deploy without him.
So they don't. So they're not advanced. Yeah, they don't have the UA, so they're not.
What else does he do? I can't. There's not, he's pretty good, right?
He's got Shadowbind.
Two melee attacks, Shadowbind, Mad 8, POW.
And he's
11 weapon master, I think.
And his magic attack, instead of, unlike the others, is a spray. And he's a battle wizard.
Okay. I was just trying to figure out what he was missing out by not taking them.
He's a monster, but he's 3 points.
Yeah.
So it's a little tricky with him.
He might have just not wanted them to be advanced deploy either. I mean, I'm sure. I guess you can just advanced deploy them back. But
I love advanced deploy for infantry swarmless because it just gives you more room to deploy, which is.
It also lets you emergency respond to something you don't like developing. If you have to go first,
yeah, advanced deploy is a very strong ability.
Yeah,
and the Hex Hunters are a unit that can really very quickly get into bad matchups if you're not careful. So advanced deploy, I think, is really strong for him. I firmly believe Bial to be worth his 3 points, but if the choice was between Bial or Feralor, I think Feralor is the correct choice.
I also just love the ambushers, like just a little throwaway. If they ever come, if they do anything, it'll just break the game's back. Usually, that's like,
oh, they're only 5 points.
Exactly, so it's not a huge commitment.
Feralor is one of those models that I really like, and I'm a little sad that he has not seen play in the meta to the extent I think he deserves, and it's mostly because Legion players tend to just sort of follow along in after Jake's example, and Jake prefers not to play Feralor because he wants his Legionnaires to die. But if you don't want your Legionnaires to die, Feralor is pretty good include.
Effing Mage Static has blown me out so many times from Marshall. And I actually ran into, did he tell you that I ran into it the other night?
Like, no, just, I saw him playing,
went to Bone Shaker, like the guy standing next to Feralor, hoping that he would kill Feralor, and was like 6 inches out. And he was just like, I thought you said you weren't going to forget. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, you can take back your move. And I'm like, no, I deserve this.
And then Feralor cuts Ragman.
Oh, yeah. Ragman was very dead. He was very dead. I was like,
just shaking the stick.
Yep. I was like, that's what you get, Ragman. You had 3 more inches of movement. We could have done this, but no.
I'm kind of surprised he didn't shoehorn the Blackfrost shard into that list.
Well, what do you take out? Bogtrog Ambushers?
That's what you'd have to take.
Yeah.
And I think that's not a terrible play. But the ambushers will make some things happen randomly.
No, they're good. I just, when I think about playing an infantry swarm, it just seems like being able to debuff defense or armor
I agree.
Can make your life way easier.
I mean, Blackfrost, as it in his other list, by any chance.
probably.
Maybe even take the Deathstalkers out. Are they five points or 4 points?
Four.
No.
They might be five.
I would not take Deathstalkers out.
No.
Like he does. That's his only guns, keeping people honest. There are no Ravagors in there.
Mm. Also, they're Deathstalkers. They so literally good. Never miss.
They just mint points. they're like reverse pots. They're just like, here's 2 points of return.
So I don't know. This list is just like this is definitely like probably the king of the. Of the weird WTC lists.
I'm excited about this list. I hope he nut stomps people with that list.
I mean, he's going to be too drunk. But go, Jerry!
I don't feel like the list is weird. I mean, it's very...
Just remember, Jerry, you don't have to roll command checks for
it's,
your own
terror. It's not weird. It's what you expect to see a Kallus list, but you don't... Like, it's weird that somebody built a Kallus
it's
list
for
it.
It's very much a Krix list, and then it's a lot of dudes, and it's a lot of recursion.
But they're better than Krix troops.
Better and worse.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not, like, weapon masters, I guess, but they're faster and...
I'll tell you, I'd give a nut to have that feat in Krix, though.
What's that?
Said I'd probably drop a nut for that feat in Krix.
That's yeah. Pretty good.
It's a really good infantry swarmy feat.
Yeah. It is.
Really good.
So let me get this straight. If I kill your guy, you get an incubus and either a bog trog, a shambler, or part of a...
A shredder.
Presuming his feet doesn't RFP his own dudes.
I bet he wins a lot of games just on Death Clock with it.
You could also do that. Just jam, jam, jam.
Yeah, and you got enough tough recursion garbage. And on the feet turn, if they don't like just literally take a turn off, they're going to be sinking 20 minutes
tough
on
tough legionnaires, too.
Yeah.
God,
that unit would be miserable to remove.
You know what's miserable?
I like it.
Getting charged by swordsmen.
Yeah, they're really mean.
Actually, now that I think about it, I guess he doesn't really need the Black Frost Shard for hitting because he does have...
Ignite.
Dark Guidance. And Ignite.
Yeah.
Well,
he's got the tools. It's nice to,
sometimes
nice
you
to
wanna,
double down.
Sometimes you want to double up.
Mm-hmm. I guess like four Devastators.
I wish I had plus four damage.
Yep. That's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, yeah, I don't know. That might be all that we've got. We got a couple more lists, but I don't... We probably talked about the most interesting ones. So, and like I said, if I'm not mentioning your list, it doesn't mean that I think that it sucked or it wasn't interesting or whatever. But
it's just that it sucked and it was not interesting.
It sucked and was not interesting. That's correct. Yeah, Nigel beat me to it.
Oh, sorry.
I did notice, like I said, when I was looking through a lot of the lists, and you know, it's not like I was looking through. I mean, I was looking through like 500 lists over the course of 2 or 3 hours. It was probably not even that long. It's probably 2 hours, but there are a lot of. There are a lot of very samey things this year at the WTC is a thing that I noticed. It seems like people went a lot more towards like the sort of standard style or the standard side of the spectrum rather than going out like into the, like branching out into doing their own like weird wacky things. Like the meta this year seems a lot more consolidated than it did last year. There was a clear shift last year. I felt like between like a European meta and like an American meta, like you could tell just by kind of looking at the list, like that's really weird. And then this year, when you look at almost just pick any random list, like any just list at random, and you're just kind of like, oh yeah, that's the stuff that people take. You know, it's just not.
Yeah.
Do you think that there's a reason for that, or what?
I don't know. I think.
Is there like a discussion to be had about this?
If I could psychoanalyze for a moment.
Please do.
I think every WTC team represents probably the best people in the country at War Machine in general.
Of their respective countries?
Yes.
Yes.
Except for Ireland.
What's that?
Except for Ireland, right.
If they have a lot of confirmation bias that they're the best at playing whatever because they're very successful in their country, in their meta. They may even travel some and be very successful in the European meta or whatever. So you have a lot of players that are used to being an alpha dog and think that they're going to outplay their opponent, so they want to play with the best stuff. And I... Because, like we've talked about before, there's like two ways in general to kind of approach it, which is to go rogue and play something that somebody's not practiced against to gain an edge that way, or to be the very best person at a particular list or deck.
I think that there's an element of that that's true. I also think the team format in and of itself lends itself to people playing lists that are perceived best because now you are talking about, instead of going into a tournament by yourself, in which case you're like, you might be like, oh, I'll rogue factor it. Like, you know, it's all on me. It's fine. Like, I'll look like a genius at the end of the day if I come out on top. If I don't, you know, whatever. Like, I, you know, it was worth trying it. But if you go in and you're like, and these other four guys are counting on me to do well, you're much less likely to take a rogue factor than you are.
You don't want to get yelled at for playing Grail?
Well, you also just don't want to let your teammates down.
Yeah.
Well, the weird thing is that, like, to get on the team, you have to have, like, demonstrated. Like, say you have a list that is your jam that's not conventional. You probably got onto the team playing it. And just, it's surprising that across the board that hasn't necessarily happened. Like,
right.
Some people are, like, a card chip specialist, or, like, they're a specialist in something weird. And then they can get
Nigel.
On the team.
No one is a card chip specialist.
But, you know, sorry, Grail. Someone's a Grail specialist, and they get on with Grail. And then but it's a weird to see that when you get to that level, that it just distills all the army books to something. It's like, you know, the same 20% of the army gets over and over and over.
The evals, the e-halies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, there's also, there's certain elements when you're designing your five list, I think, that you want a lot of purification. And so we see a lot of the purification casters over and over. That's why we see Evale so much. She has purification, and it's just really good. And it just shuts down. It's actually why that spell...
And she plays heavy up every game.
Yeah, I mean...
That's also a reason.
Obviously, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, you might consider other Legion casters that are on par with her power, but you get to bring purification to the table for your team.
Right.
Which shuts down, like, half the game.
Right.
Which is why purification is bad for the game in general.
Yes.
Is because it invalidates so many playstyles.
Yeah. I mean, the number one, like, if I were to be able to change anything about this game, it would be to take every purification caster and change purification for Hex Blast or a Hex Blast variant. Like, I really think that would make the game significantly better. But
I think purification might be okay if it was pay 2 plus the cost of any spells you care to dispel or something like that, and make it like a pretty heavy burden.
I think it would be fine even if it was just on one or two casters. But it's on so many casters.
Yeah.
You know?
It just didn't, like, it's just bizarre to me that in the design they were like, oh, this is, like, okay. Because so much of the game is about layering different effects together to overcome the layers that your opponent has put together. And figuring out how to, like, unwrap those puzzles, and purification is just like, you know, it's like the solution to the Gordian knot is to slash through it, which is boring.
Yeah.
And I think the most problematic purifications are now on the casters that don't pay much of a cost to cast it. Because on some, like, on Morvana, it's actually more reasonably balanced than it is on some of the other purification casters.
Well, Harbinger is by far the
Harbinger,
most egregious.
I'm not sure she is anymore.
I actually think...
I think it's Lucant now.
Because
he doesn't use upkeep spells himself.
Watcher.
But there's no real onus on him for his focus to be doing things every turn.
Sure, that's a better argument.
Like, Harbinger wants to camp or heal. Morvana wants her upkeeps to be out there. Vale wants her upkeeps to be out there. Like, Vale is still problematic because she gets a free one. Like, the free purification is troublesome. Like, I actually say Krios 3's feat, for the same reason, is kind of troublesome, because it's just a free purification.
Yeah, but it's okay, because you just have to weather it the one turn. The thing about Vale is that, like, she gets to purify, put all her stuff back out there, and then if she really needs to purify again, she still has it in the tank. Like,
Lucant and Harbinger are the most egregious, though, now. Like, Lucant, I think, was the big was a real mistake, because he can cast it basically at no risk and no real cost. Like,
Doomshaper can do the same thing.
But he at least is imminently killable, usually. I mean, in the Runes of War mishmash, maybe not, but...
It's just bad all around, because there's so much of the game. If you think about, like, what percentage of the casters are sort of upkeep heavy? Like,
it's
70%?
A high percentage, yeah.
So then to have these just, like, mass invalidation, it's like, you know, when you're doing, like, there's not a lot of peeve lads or guys who just, like, kick ass without
putting out their upkeeps. I mean, particularly, like, as a mercenary player, I feel like almost every single one of my competitive casters is effectively a buff pot.
Yeah.
And that's like purification is a huge kick in the nuts.
Yeah. And there's some casters who don't care. Like they can get it, like they've got two costs, like Iron Flesh type spells, they can get back out and then they can reform and regroup. But it just like invalidates. There's so many guys that are like get kicked farther down the line because they can't.
Yeah.
Well, and purification is actually more egregious in Convergence and Hordes than it is in War Machine in general because of the focus cost. Because then that in Hordes, you're not really have as much of an opportunity cost. Sure, there's a spell you don't get to cast with your caster, maybe like an offensive spell. And in Convergence, they mint focus, so it doesn't have quite the cost as it does. Like for example, with Kraos, if I cast Purification, I can't really get Defender's Ward out and feed a Redeemer.
I mean, Kraos is probably...
Kraos is
the
a problem
least
for a
egregious,
different reason.
Except for the fact that it pairs with his feet. Like mm-hmm. That's really the only reason why I don't like him. Like it on him.
No, it's completely unfair on him. But even Harbinger needs to camp in a lot of situations, so Purification can have a cost for her.
Yeah,
I don't disagree with that.
I mean, that's a true statement. It feels like in practice that very rarely like is the situation.
I've set traps for Harbinger where it's like, oh, if she purifies this turn, I think I can get her.
Yep.
But if Kraos didn't have the feat that he had, I wouldn't mind Purification on him.
No, right. It'd be reasonable
because he has Defender's Ward, which is one of the highest value upkeeps in the game.
Right.
And like he's a squishy bastard if he can't camp.
Right.
And his control area is not infinite, so he has to actually put himself somewhere.
It just messes with game flow so bad. I do, like, as per Josh, make it like a hex blasty. Like, maybe you cast it on a unit that then ignores upkeeps or some sort of other way of getting it. It's just, it sets the tempo for the opponent back so far sometimes when they've got, like, five focus worth of upkeeps they got to get back out.
Well, that's the other thing is, like, hex blast is, like, it's like a question. It's right. It's like, what upkeep do I really need removed? What am I really going to focus on this turn? How am I going to like bend my army around it? And then on top of that, like, there's still the element of I need to hit. Whereas Purification is just like there's literally no thought, right? Like there's just nothing to it.
Yep. Even Epic Iris, there's just an off chance she'll miss her 3, 4, 5, 6 to hit or whatever.
Right.
Like you can always, as a player, like maybe this will happen.
I've actually seen Epic Veil players screw it up. It's kind of hard. They cast all of their upkeeps and then they purify. I saw Jake Van Meter do that once.
Really?
Yeah, it was actually pretty hilarious.
That's pretty funny.
He was like, I'm an idiot.
Yeah, and the fact that they keep putting it, like, it would be okay on Morvana, except she's light cav. So
keep putting it on people.
Risk. Like, the risk factor for her to cast it is removed. Like, it would be okay on Epic Veil, except she has Occultation, a feat that gives it to her for free, and Refuge, so she can also move back.
I wouldn't hate it on a caster that was a 5-focus caster, right? Costs, like, over half their stack, and it's only 10 inches, right? Like, that's fine. But they put it on, like, 7s and 8s and 10s. Why?
Yep.
Why?
For game balance.
Yeah.
Got to keep those upkeeps in check.
Yeah.
It's not such a terrible world we live in, but I do think that's one of the reasons why you see so much Epic Veil, Harbinger, is they bring that purification hammer to the table because it really is a hammer.
I agree. I actually think that if, like, just the simple act, like we've talked a lot in the past weeks about seeing additional variation in, like, casters that you see, and I feel like changing purification to a Hexblast variant on every caster that has it would single-handedly, like, do more for increasing caster variation than anything else that could be done.
That may be true.
Interesting. I hadn't thought about that before.
Well, I've heard actually a couple other ideas for purification variants. One is to, like, place a 3-inch AoE anywhere in your control area, and it would dispel upkeeps under that AoE. So it would, at the same time, be there are upsides to that version in that it won't hit your own upkeeps.
And then every now and then you can catch, like, two enemy upkeeps.
If your opponent misplays, but otherwise it's 3 cost to dispel one of their spells.
Right.
But there were just as many purification casters last year, right?
Yeah.
Well, minus Lucan.
Yeah.
Which
he didn't really show.
There's
up.
Not very many.
There is at least one or two Lugans, right?
Yeah, and there's not very many few. Convergence players.
Though. No, I know.
But every Convergence player, I bet, has Lugan. I didn't check that, yeah. But I'd be willing to bet that. Yeah, so that's. I think that's one of the reasons why some of the samey that we see, it's really to bring purification to the table. It's that powerful.
Well, that was Chad's point about the same number of purification casters last year, but he feels like there were... Of course, this is going off of feel of something that was like a year ago, and so our perceptions may not be accurate. Maybe the lists are just as samey, and WTC was new to us, so it was more exciting at the time.
We could data mine it.
I mean, we could. There's also twice as many lists.
Yeah.
And I just off the top of my head can think of, like, several lists last year that I was like, oh, weird, oh, weird, oh, weird. Like,
yeah.
It seems like we were saying it all the time. But maybe you're right. Maybe we're just...
Yeah, no, I mean, you might very well... I'm not saying you're not right. I'm just saying it's hard without, like, raw data to be able to be sure that that's actually the case. Mm-hmm. But I don't know.
Well, shall we move on to a recurring topic that we had done in the past, which was talk about... building some entry-level lists, or do we want to do...
We should, but I actually got a message from a listener, Daniel Lewis.
Lewis, you're on my poop list.
He wanted me to ask John a question.
Oh, okay. Well, we got time for that.
So, John, you got time for a little question from Daniel Lewis?
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't. You're right. Well, Daniel Lewis wanted me to ask you, what do you call a pirate who says yes all the time?
I don't know, Josh.
An eyedropper. Yarr.
All right.
Where's Colin?
I don't think he would have appreciated that one. Okay.
Yep.
That was for you, Alan.
Is this segment dead yet?
No, I don't know if you noticed, but 100% of people who voted said that there's legions of pirate fans out there. So,
yep. So, this week I think we're going to take a look at Protectorate of Menoth and building a couple entry-level lists for someone who might want to get into the game brand new with the Protectorate as their faction.
That's tough.
It is. It is, but I believe in you.
Yeah.
Harbinger.
God, no.
No, she's terrible on new players. They always over-martyr and martyr at the wrong things at the wrong time and get themselves killed.
Peace, Evie?
No.
So hard with so much kill box this year. Like, immediately, Peace, Evie is one of the ones that I would reach for first, typically. But I think Fiora 2 actually is probably the right answer because she sort of automatically insulates you from... killing yourself, and the fact that she's immune to fire.
15-19.
With escort has 15-19, even if you spend all of her focus. And shooting fire-causing rockets with adjudicators is pretty easy. Aim at some guys, drift on them, light them on fire, and kill them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. The adjudicators would be your pick for entry level?
I mean, it's hard to imagine a world where you play Fiora 2 without adjudicator.
Well, I mean, you could always entry-level it with, like, a Redeemer and then say, like, build up to adjudicator when you can or something like that.
Our entry-level statement here is more, like, lowest barrier of skill to playing,
right.
To playing well. It's still somebody who's probably playing the game with an eye to tournaments. It's not necessarily someone brand new to faction.
Right. Isn't that what Ben Risloff did? Just take your Fiora 2 list?
Yeah. The old version. But
you just, like, basically... For the first time ever, like, won a tournament practically, like, with Menoth.
He rolled face pretty hard with that. He won the LCQ with it. Beat Crump in the finals.
He got diced. got diced.
Did he legitimately get diced, or is that Crump's?
The way I remember it, he had a Gnarlhorn Satyr, the Counterslam Satyr, and Ben actually procced Counterslam in such a way that if Crump had hit with the Gnarlhorn, that the Avatar would have slammed over, like, a Vassal and, like, all three choir members or something like that. And the book hadn't activated yet. So in addition to slamming the Avatar away and knocking it down and, you know, saving whatever the Avatar was charging. And then the Gnarlhorn, like, just rolled, like, a 2 or a 3 or something like that and missed.
I mean, I'm sure Ben was, you know, counting on that miss. I'm sure that was That was a strategy.
And this is like, this is also, because Narrowhorns get plus two to their slam distance, so that's like regardless of the distance rolled. Like, he would have killed all that stuff regardless of the distance rolled.
Yeah.
Like,
Crumb got diced.
Yeah. But yeah, even so, it's still pretty impressive to take a tournament for the first time ever using a list. That was with John's old school Fiora list, with the one that was like Avatar, Templar, Vanquisher, Vanquisher.
Bastions.
All right, so let's say we're building.
I'm going to build it really quick here.
You like Ifyora better than 3S? I was also thinking 3S is kind of a hard character to kill. And
that's a second one we can do.
But I think Warpath generates a more finesse
oriented
based play than Escort does.
That makes sense.
Both are strong.
Ifyora is also kind of like a core protectorate. Like, here's a bunch of jacks, and that's what protectorate does. Sweet. Bunch of jacks.
Yep.
So you're building a list right now?
I am.
I assume it started with Adjudicator and a Vassal.
What?
And Choir.
So the basic idea being a Bond Adjudicator with Epic Fiora will throw out, with the ancillary attack, 6 3-inch AoE templates that are all power 8?
9.
9. So they kill a lot of stuff, and anything they don't kill, they set on fire.
It might even light, like, you know, roughly 8 models in your deployment zone on fire before you get to go. That could happen. That will happen.
You seem pretty upset about this,
I'm
Josh.
Salty.
This possible situation.
This possible situation.
Theoretical.
Yeah. Also, when facing Ifyora, don't cast Solid Ground.
I think I
might. It's actually a trap.
Oh. Might have accidentally.
The feat was glorious.
Oh my God. I think I might have accidentally bingoed a list. Just putting stuff in.
Bingo.
Oh my God. You heard it here, folks.
I put the list together and the points just added up exactly right.
Well, that means that Ifyora is clearly the right choice.
John is building this low barrier to entry to tournaments, and it's going to change the meta.
Lightning in a bottle.
I doubt that, but it's Fiora 2, Judicator, Reckoner, Avatar, Covenant, Rax, Gorman DeWolf, 2 Vassals, Choir, Zealots, plus Monolith Bearer.
Yeah, sounds crappy.
Pretty sweet.
Pretty solid list.
Zealots are sort of like the go-to for every protectorate list because of their ability. Like, they're just one of the strongest tar pits in existence.
Yep. Avatar's unusual with her, right?
No.
I play it all the time with her.
Really?
I love it with her.
It doesn't benefit from Escort, which is...
Nope.
Sad.
It does benefit from you putting the Covenant and Vassals in the list, though.
I mean, okay.
And Ignite.
Yeah, it's still the Avatar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I get it.
You weren't around, I guess, when we were like all raging about how it was by far the best like character jack in the entire game.
I wasn't.
For a long time, like, I was convinced that the Death Jack was. And then I was convinced a little bit that the Behemoth was. And then once John started playing, it was just like, nope, Avatar's the best. Like, nothing else even comes close to it.
Yeah.
If you can do Enliven well, it is the most ridiculous thing in the universe.
Yeah, and Gaze is the most frustrating thing in the entire game,
that
practically.
Too.
Yeah.
And it's also just armor 21 with Sacred Ward is complete BS.
Yeah.
Actually, you could cycle out the Zealots plus UA and put a full unit of Bastions in and play it old school. I actually really, really like Bastions with heavy warjacks because they protect Enliven. And they things tend to get hung up on them, like other heavies. So you end up trading a couple Bastions for heavies often in that scenario.
In this list with Fiora, one of the things that you can do, one of the tricks is sort of like, can you deliver your Avatar to an opposing Colossal without losing your Avatar in the process? Because the Avatar can get pretty easily handled by Colossals. Like Stormwall, is pretty funny. If Stormwall can get an arm lock onto your Avatar, a weapon lock, it's all over. It's just over. You can't break it. It just picks you up by the sword and you lose. But one of the tricks you can do is you minifeat the Zealots and run them up in front of the Colossal, then move the Avatar in and gaze at like max distance. Colossal can't get away. Gaze controls Colossals. And they can't beat through the Zealots to get to you. And then, so the next turn, Avatar is just like, I'm coming.
Yeah, you can also move the Judicator up into position as well. so that you can charge with both. And let me tell you, an Ignited Judicator or an Ignited Avatar both get work done.
Yes, they do.
It's pretty good.
If you roll 4 focus.
Yeah.
It's actually a cool list in that it teaches you sort of the basics of controlling the movement of the battlefield in that regard, like setting up your shorter range, of your shorter range checks. And
there's also some other kind of cool tricks. You can mini-feet the Zealots, run and jam them, drop rockets, light some of your guys on fire, feet with Fiora, move the fire onto their models, because the fire doesn't kill your models, and the rockets don't kill your models, because they're
defeated.
Yeah. I actually used to do that a lot. With Bastions, I used to light them on fire with a Vanquisher shot, and then feet onto, like, all their high defense stuff, and just kill it. Yeah. So, things that this list will probably be good against, probably good in most of the Protectorate matchups. Be interested to see it in the Convergence matchup. I feel like it would be pretty good if you can deal with the Foundries.
Can the Judicator deal with them?
Maybe.
Probably not Lucan's Foundries.
Shield Guards.
Yep.
Which is what Protector gets to see, is Lucan pretty much all day, every day.
Yep.
I think that Fiora list could play with the Lucan list, though. It hits hard enough where, you know, even under the feet, just like, okay, let's do this.
Probably not too difficult, too, to kill enough stuff that they just start, like, losing out on the recursion. You know? Like, you just kill faster than they can recurse.
Fire certainly helps, too.
Especially when it never goes out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. I like that. That's a good one. I'd say that... Yeah, I don't think I like Kreas 3 as the second option.
One that we can put in the discussion, and he's insanely powerful, but really boring, is Kreas 2.
Yep, I was actually thinking that maybe, but with some of the non-Theme Force options.
Yeah, I was going to say, we got to build... Well, actually, even the Theme Force has TFG in it, so you can build a strong...
And Flamebringers. God, you can play Flamebringers in the Theme Force too, can't you?
You also can do that, so that might be worthwhile. The interesting thing about Kreas 2 is he does a lot like... He's a lot like Butcher 2's Doom Reaver spam. So, in that, it'll win a lot of games and get you to a certain level. But if your opponent is prepared for it, they're going to do pretty well against you. Though, if you put some faster elements in the list so that not... Because I've seen a lot of Kreas 2 theme forces where the longest threat range is 8.5 inches.
Yep.
And it's so easy to play around. You're just like...
They go up to 9 when they put Bastions in, but...
Right.
Still pretty much not enough.
Pretty mopey.
Played against that with Family Reunion once. It was glorious.
Ugh.
It was like almost auto win.
Let me build a Kreas 2.
Yes, like terrible threat ranges. I played against it. It was almost an auto win. Here's the list you should play.
No.
You can build the list.
Put Flamebringers in.
Oh, okay.
You can build the list to be a little more dynamic than that.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, for the longest time, we never took a real close look at the Theme Force. We're like, man, this Theme Force is bad. It's the 8.5 inch threat Theme Force. Like, everybody plays it with just.
It's just Aaron's exemplar.
8.5 inches is nothing to complain about.
I wouldn't know.
But then we took a look at it again more recently, and we found that Flame Guard units are also applicable for the Theme Force, like Daughters of the Flame, Temple Flame Guard. It's pretty much everything but Zealots. Flame Bringers now.
But Zealots are the best unit in all of... What about Choir? Can he take Choir?
No.
So the two best units in all of Protectorate he can't take.
But like the only Jack he takes is Fire of Redemption or Fire of Salvation.
Doesn't matter. You take Choir for that.
But it doesn't need Choir. It's already Mat 8.
Doesn't matter. Take Choir. Mat 10. Why not?
It also has an imprint for boosted attack rolls.
Boosh.
It could be Mat 10 with boosted attack rolls.
Side note, guess who won the Phoenix Open?
Who?
Chiriboga.
Oh.
So congrats, Ryan.
Nice. Good job, buddy.
Congrats.
I mean, is that who? Never mind. I can't.
I have no.
Nigel knows exactly where I was.
Oh, my God. Is that where that's from?
No,
oh, my God.
Stop, stop. 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 Please stop.
That has to mean he was talking about Keith.
I have no idea what's going on.
We'll explain it. We'll explain it when you're older.
Nigel was basically getting bored and just.
I'm like you, listeners. I have no earthly idea what's going on. Yeah.
This is what I like to refer to as the professional part of our podcast. Yeah,
sorry,
the inside
my bad.
Jokes.
When I saw it, we almost have to like pause.
We just need some. We need some list building music, Lance. Lance, list building music.
Tall and thin and young and lovely, the girl from Ipanema goes walking, and when she passes, each one she.
Yeah, the Spanish flea. Can't leave me up to my own devices for 10 seconds. I'll go somewhere.
So there's one thing I actually kind of like about both these lists is they end up. Sort of babysitting your casters, because one has got Gravis and the other one has got the book,
mm-hmm.
which is actually
pretty lame.
A really, really.
Well, you can at least freeze through Gravis.
I don't think you can, actually.
I don't think you can.
What?
He's stationary knockdown, too.
What does Gravis do? I've never seen Gravis.
Exemplars gain immunity to knockdown and stationary, I guess, within his command range.
Maybe not stationary.
I don't think it is stationary either, but maybe it is.
And
I don't know.
Krios is an exemplar, obviously. So, okay.
Yeah. I played Hudson a couple weeks ago, and... I mean, you had to look it up, and I was disappointed with the result.
Pretty lame.
Yeah.
Just kill Gravis.
No, it's true. He's a lot easier to kill than, like, the book.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. I agree. He does have the dismount, though, so he's, like, baby book.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah.
Yeah, he's exactly baby book with, like, twice as many HP, but...
Yeah.
You can at least go through it all.
You can at least theoretically two-shot him, whereas the book, yeah, just... It's 5 shots, period.
So you can 3-shot the book.
Do you guys think...
You just need Iris.
You can 2-shot the book.
How do you 2-shot him?
Ghost Iris snipers. One and Ghost Sniper.
Aha! Uh-huh.
Or 2 Ghost Snipers.
What do you guys think? Do you guys think 2 units of
God damn
Daughters of the Flame or 1 unit of Flamebringers is better value?
2 units of Daughters or 1 unit of Flamebringers?
They have the same point cost, 10 points.
Interesting.
Huh. Whoa, 10 points on those Flamebringers.
We can't get 2 units of Flamebringers, or 2 units of Daughters of Flame and a unit of Flamebringers?
Not meet the tier requirements.
I like the Flamebringers. I hate to say it.
I also, what is his spell selection again? I've never played against Krios.
Really quick. He actually has a very, very good spell list.
Agreed.
It's got a spell called Sacrosanct, which is
Hero's Tragedy, but it triggers on melee or it triggers on ranged attacks and against war beasts and war jacks.
If you kill a model in the unit, you get knocked down.
That's okay.
Really, really good.
Yeah,
it's particularly good on Daughters of the Flame when you jam with them.
Yeah, yeah.
He has Castigate, which is a control area spell that shuts off channeling.
Yeah,
or is it just Arc Nodes? Arc Nodes. Just shuts off Arc Nodes. Channeling's still a go. So, go trees, go spell martyrs, go things Veil hits with their balls.
Yeah. He's got a range 8 hex blast called Chasen.
Yep. Range 8, pow 12. Single target. If it does damage, removes upkeeps.
Okay. See, that's a variant. Boom.
Yep. He also has Inviolable Resolve, which is the most boring best spell he'll cast every game.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. I might change this list a little bit. But here's what I have in case what you guys think. I've got Grand Exemplar Krios, Fire of Salvation, Gravis, Bastion Seneschal, 3 units of Knight's Exemplar, 2 units of Daughters of the Flame, Full Temple Flame Guard, Bastions, and
my
a
God, that all fits.
Knight's Exemplar Seneschal.
It's a lot of beef.
It's a lot of speed. It's a lot of reach. It's very jammy.
I'm sorry, I wasn't listening. Did you go with the Flamebringers or the Daughters of the Flame?
I went with the two units of the Daughters of the Flame.
If I can, I would like to make an argument for the Flamebringers.
Please do.
And that argument is solely just his feat is really freaking effing amazing.
Over the top with them, yeah.
Daughters, with Flamebringers, rather.
It's like three sidesteps, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing on them, but it's also amazing on daughters. 10 daughters with 2 attacks apiece that auto-hit, auto-damage.
3 attacks.
3 attacks with sidestep.
That's right, they get an extra attack.
4 attacks with sidestep.
So if you can
get... Well, you only get sidestep on that.
If you can get, like, 5 daughters of the flame on a caster, you can auto-kill them.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, good.
So I think you could very easily do the Flamebringer version. I think that'd be good. Or the Daughter of the Flame version. I think both are good.
What are Flamebringer stats with Inviolable Resolve?
They are...
15-13.
So they become 15-15 with Inviolable Resolve?
No, they're 15-13 with Inviolable Resolve.
No, they're much
They're not 15-11s.
They're like...
Flamebringers, not the Daughters.
Oh, they're Flamebringers.
14-15, I think, is what their base is. So I think they go to 16-17, but I'm going to double check. They are... 14-15, so they go to...
14-17. 14-17 is pretty good. 5 boxes.
Yep. I also kind of like the fact that I've got a unit of Bastions in here with the Bastion Seneschal. So that's kind of annoying, too. And, like, a single unit of Bastions is so amazing when you have a no-knockdown with the Gravis grants so that you can build a bunker for your caster, making it pretty easy to move up very safely.
Aren't Flamebringers also... Are they Pathfinder or no?
They are.
Yeah, I think I like Flamebringers better than Daughters.
The only thing is that, like, they are... Even at 14-17, they're still pretty easy to kill. And just, you start to lose a little bit of value once you've lost, like, 2.
Yeah. No, that's true.
But, so, I mean, I think that yeah, you could go either way. I think that you could definitely go either way. So, it's basically just a...
I just like the 12-inch threat. It's like,
I know. No, I like them a lot. Like, there's a lot of stuff I like about them with Krios.
And then how deep they'll be able to dig.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I think they're really good, too. I actually, my favorite unit with Krios, too, actually, is Tumble Flame Guard.
Those reach. Guys, reach so good.
So good on his feet. 2 attacks apiece, pop downs, auto-hitting. Like, they just killed infantry in droves.
Mm.
And they've got a good standard threat range. Actually...
His feet is amazing.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind getting the UA on them, because then they would automatically cause fire. Pretty good. And they get a unit turn of Iron Zeal, which is also pretty good.
Since we're talking about this list, what are the tier bonuses?
Let me give them to you.
And does this meet tier 4?
There are a bunch of advanced moves and extra deployment zone. That's mostly the benefits you gain.
Knight's Exemplar gain advanced move. You get a free Knight's Exemplar Seneschal, which is cool.
That guy's so good. He's
and you get plus 2 inches of deployment.
That list becomes frighteningly quick, actually, at that point.
Yeah.
Like, the Knight's Exemplar deploy far enough up that they'll be able to be relevant right quickly, and then the TFG are fast. The TFG and the Daughters are fast enough to still get out front of them.
Yeah, they tie up for a turn and deliver your army. That's what they do. Also, Sacrosanct on TFG jamming up your world is also pretty amazing.
That spell is so freaking annoying.
Yeah.
It's a nightmare.
Anyway, I think that's actually a pretty good two-list pair. It's interesting because... They both solve for defense. Friar does it with fire and AoEs and her feet. And Krios does it with his feet, where he just is like, I don't care about your defense for a turn, which is usually enough to get him through. And they both solve for armor in that, hey, ignited jacks kill things, and hey, a million weapon masters also kill things. Yeah. So.
And he can usually pull off an upkeep if he needs to.
Yep.
A million weapon masters with an extra attack, too.
Yep, and then I just built a 2-list, which is how I used to do it all the time, with no Eris 2. I never used to play that.
Yeah, what do you need her for? She's a crutch.
She's kind of a crutch. She's also not always worth 3 points.
She actually frequently is not worth 3 points. Frequently.
But sometimes she's worth 12.
But yeah, exactly. So when she's worth her points, she's really worth her points, and you really need her. So, yeah.
How is it we've never seen a Krios 2 theme for us with Temple Flame card in it?
I don't know.
I have no idea.
It breaks my brain because they're so good with him.
That list seems really, really good.
It seems better than, like, normally what we see.
It's just a bunch of
it's like Errants and then 5 units of Knight's Exemplar.
So that they're all like, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I actually didn't even put Errants in the list.
Did you get Gravis in there then?
I did.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, Nigel's over here like...
Both lists, Amin is stationary.
Actually, I still would rather play against the Epic Krios list, though. That's the one
you could pick that one off.
Yep.
That list's pretty strong in scenario, though.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, both lists are pretty strong in scenario.
Bunch of high rat, auto-wounding sniper seems pretty good against that list.
Yep.
It's pretty good. One thing we didn't mention either that kind of idiot-proofs you a little bit with Krios 2 is all the exemplar gain immunity to continuous effects. So you don't, you know, it may prevent you from getting boned by something that, you know.
Like I bunched up all my exemplars. Like, venom, venom, venom. It's like, they didn't die.
Yeah. It's corner case, but it's definitely, you know, it's nice.
It's a nice bonus.
Is Krios himself, I mean?
He's, yeah. Yep. He has Aegis, and then he's got...
So in these cases, both of your casters are immune to burning to death. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, also, every time a trooper model dies, he heals for one.
Combo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's the original imperishable conviction caster.
I just remember when I was, like, starting out and played against Rivagors and had Damiano burned to death. That was sad. It was sad. It made me cry.
So both these lists do the same thing in that they offer hard-to-kill casters, which is hard to find in Protectorate.
Yeah.
There's...
In fact, you've found the two.
No. There's also Eggshell.
Yeah, there's
guy.
Vindictus. And
actually, you know, Vindictus actually might not have been a bad option instead of Krios 2. We could have built a Vindictus, like, troop swarm list.
I thought about suggesting him, but he's also kind of boring.
Super boring.
Yeah.
But he actually solves the problem matchups.
Retribution matchup.
For Protectorate. Well, it's not only the Retribution matchup. He also can deliver a lot of Blessed Weapon Masters into things like Bart Galleon. You know, they can't kill enough stuff before you get there.
That's fair.
And he also can't be assassinated by range. So he's not a bad caster. I just hate him.
Bart Galleon saw last year anyway.
I mean, it's kind of not a thing. But
Bart Galleon is kind of never. Like, he was a... He's a threat that loomed and never really materialized.
The scenarios changed before he could become...
Well, he did well. Like, Crump did well with him.
Well, the list is fine. It's just got a lot of weak spots.
It's not great in scenario. And the scenario is really kind of bent it over.
Like, the big problem is that it sucks up Dougal, and it's not a list that can carry Mercs as, like, a dominant part of a two list set, in my opinion. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. That's not really what we're talking about today. So,
yeah.
Did you have a topic you wanted to talk about?
Well, I was just, you know, I was reading through the forums stuff of like Jay, response to Jay's article number 3.
The one where he blew up the internet.
Well, yeah.
I tried to.
Yeah, and some of like the responses to some of our last casts. Saw a few people that are just like, hey, you know, like I'm trying to be competitive, but I don't really like. Epic Haley. I can't make Epic Haley. Like, this was, you know, and I see posts like this every now and then. I can't make Epic Haley work for me. Like, am I just, like, but I want to be competitive, so what should I do? And it just made me think, you know, like, Keith is somebody who we see frequently take stuff that is just, for the most part, Keith plays objectively good things. Like, things that are sort of, like, agreed are good. Casters that are good.
Yeah, you have to show Keith something's good. Before he'll pick it up and play it.
Right.
Unless, like, it is obviously dumbly good.
Right.
And then he'll play that
right.
too.
And then Nigel is kind of like the opposite extreme, where he's just like, I'm Karchev-ing it up every day. I'm the Karchev special.
That's a good model. I want nothing to do with
he's
it.
He's like, this guy has the terrible in his name.
Exactly.
So he's basically my guy.
He's like, I'm the Karchev specialist. And I'm like, no, that's a Karchev special list. But, and then I think John is... a little closer to Nigel. I think Chad and I are probably a little closer to Keith, but like we're kind of like we run somewhere in between. And so I just think it may not be a super long topic to discuss, but just the idea of like when is it that you like reach for the things that are maybe not like consensus competitive? What sort of things, what are the competitive reasons to reach outside the box really? Like how are you still being a competitive tier player by going rogue, by playing with things that are, you know, when is it okay for me to be like Dan and Blythe and Bull in this list now? This is good.
I think as long as you have a reason, there's nothing wrong with it.
Agreed.
Now, you may find out that reason isn't as valid as you thought it was, but that's how you learn. But to take Jay's vernacular, you're not acting like a scrub if you're not playing Haley 2 because you may be fine.
I want to avoid using the
That's
word
fine.
Scrub, if we can
Fair.
Avoid using the word scrub.
Yeah, that word's offensive, John.
It is offensive.
Mm-hmm. To scrubs.
You opened the Pandora's box.
I didn't mean to. Yeah. I apologize.
Actually, I did, I guess, 3 weeks ago.
Let's just say non-competitive
Let's
thinking.
Just...
or non-competitive
I'm
focused.
Like the shield bearer for Scrubs. Like, that's my... Scrubs is sweet. You should want to be... You should aspire to be...
That was an awesome show.
It was not an awesome show. But there's nothing wrong with being a scrub, saying the word, or, you know, like, if some hoity-toity tournament D-bag throws it as a derogatory, you know, who cares?
Well, that's
like,
the argument that I was...
Embrace your scrubness.
...trying to make on the forum. And then Josh and John simultaneously and separately both, like, blew me up for it in saying that, like, no, that word actually is, like, totally has a negative connotation in all these other games.
It really does.
People cannot look past it, and they can't, like, think about it with any other definition or association or, you know, context.
Because that comes from Magic.
Yeah, it's absolutely, like...
particularly egregious in that game.
Yep, very egregious in that game. It just literally means, like, mouth-breathing, drooling idiot.
Yeah, no, I know, like, it was the Magic guys at... in Minneapolis, they kind of use it. It's like a derogative to players they want to dismiss who have, like, you know, I've got this deck and I put these things in it and it's better, way better than the, you know, whatever. And
okay, it's grubbly.
Yeah, exactly. And then they just sort of, But
a lot of people are a-holes.
That they, A, they're a-holes, and B, part of the mantle of being a scrub, like, so you should make a choice in life. Like, I think I was explaining this. Who was I explaining this the other day? It was like about video games. It's like the whole point of beating you with this character is that it's so stupid that you then have to admit that you got beat by it. And that's the whole point. If you should purposely want to be a scrub and beat people with Nairish so that when you win, you're like, yeah, like, because you're going to beat an alpha douche and he got beat by a scrub. He's going to have to just suck it up and, you know, go scream in his pillow. And that's the best, like, that's the most rewarding experience in life you can possibly have.
I feel like every time you sit down with Karchev, you should just be like, get ready to bite the pillow.
Yeah, I'm going to just have a little pillow.
Into your pillow.
Yeah. And just have, like, embroidered all the names who have screamed in it.
The opinions of Nigel are not reflective of this.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that it doesn't have to be a bad word. You can embrace your scrubness and enjoy it.
But
I don't even want to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the discussion.
I don't think people are capable of having, like, rational discussions about it.
Yeah. You know? Like, I mean, I think that there's just, like, there's enough bad sentiment behind a word that we can use not other words. We can use
that's totally
non-competitive
fine.
Play, think, or whatever we want to say, but yeah.
But you're not being non-competitive when you choose to reach for a new model if you're trying to answer a problem. So, for example, a lot of times when I innovate, it's because I'm solving problems for my faction. For example, the reason why High Reclaimer, even I started playing High Reclaimer, was I wanted to solve for Bart Galleon. I wanted to solve for Haley 2 in a more convenient manner. And I wanted – there's just a lot of things I wanted to solve for. And I was just like, ta-da, clouds are really good. What can I put behind these clouds? And I think at one time High Reclaimer was considered to be the worst caster in Protectorate. Like, when they would put those polls up, he was in the bottom three. And sometimes people would call him the worst.
This would be the same way for Doomshaper.
Yeah.
People used to say Doomshaper was by far the worst Trollblood caster, and now he's probably the most popular Trollblood caster of all time.
Gorshade won. He hasn't made, like, a super resurgence into the mainstream, but he's seen some play in competitive environments.
There's definitely a thing where, and this is definitely a thing in video games, and it's also a thing in War Machine, but I'm struggling to think of specific, I'm trying to think of specific examples from my own War Machine history, and I'm not being able to come up with any on the spot. But it's a thing where, like, you can play your most competitive, you can play your most competitive game or style or list or whatever. And there's definitely value in, like, practicing that way and getting the practice for that specific game plan and contingencies, because that's how you gain skill. Like, that's how you gain a high level of skill with the supposed quote-unquote competitive things. But then there's also a lot of skill. There's also a lot of value in just playing something for fun and just goofing around or whatever. Like, I'm trying to think of...
I almost always try to use one of my games on Wednesday nights as, like, I haven't played this caster in a while and I want to have fun, so this is my fun
list.
That's
the way that I did it for a long time, too.
Yeah.
The thing is, when you go outside of... when you play things that are considered to be not competitive or go outside the box and play things you're not used to, you're still expanding your knowledge base.
Right.
So And I think as long as you're being objective about it, which is really hard when you're evaluating yourself, like, you're doing yourself a great service when you do different things. Now, there can also be, like, the other side of that coin is practicing the same thing over and over again can also reap a different kind of benefit, which is more muscle memory, better understanding of situations for a particular list. You know, if you play the same list over and over.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So, but I think that there's room in the world for ways to grow both ways. Like, you can grow with expanding because you have more comparative analysis. Oh, this was good in this situation. I can apply this in a different situation, even with a different caster. But this particular set of circumstances, you know, Bastion's holding a zone or whatever with a Seneschal and, like, a wall or something silly. Isn't necessarily caster dependent, but you can learn that by playing a different caster.
Right. Well, and it's also just that idea that, because, like, for the longest time, too, I would have my list that I would take to tournaments, and then I would have my list that I would play at the weekly shop, like, at the weekly game night. And they were, I would almost never play, like, my tournament list at the weekly game night, because I felt like I was practiced enough with them or whatever, and mm-hmm. It wasn't as fun for me as I would just sit down with something fun. And you can still get value out of having just, like, a fun game, just a fun experience in that way. There are examples of things that come up in games all the time There are examples of things that come up in games very infrequently, which are very important, that you can get a really good amount of, like, you can get really good practice for in these kinds of fun games with the sort of more esoteric stuff. Like, for instance, I'm trying to think of, like, a really good example. I just had one and I forgot it. Someone else is going to have to take it
away. I that's actually the sort of fun games is how I started to gain respect for and started trying to put Epic Alexia into more of my lists mm-hmm. because she was one of those models that I reached for when I was playing Ashlyn. I was like, oh, these two should work well together. And I want to play Ashlyn just for fun, and Epic Alexia is a cool model. I want to get it in here. And I played her, and I was like, wow, backed up by Gun Mages, she's actually really a monster. And, like, that was something that I started to translate over into other lists. And that was, you know, like, that's an example of just picking up, like, a model and learning, mm-hmm. like, this is a way to make this model work. Because in Epic Alexia's case, it's what's the quickest way to get her three souls, and then once she mm-hmm. has those three souls, you know, she's a beast.
So an even more esoteric example is, like, I remember one time I went to, this was a long time ago, like, long, long, long time ago. Right at the very beginning of Mark II, Gunnbjorn had just come out, and there was a league going on in Des Moines, and it wasn't, like, widely known that Gunnbjorn was, like, he wasn't widely considered bad at the time. Like, he was just kind of, like, people were still trying to figure him out and trying to figure out what to do with him. And so I took a list, and I sat down, and my opponent dropped Epic Kaya. And I was like, this is as bad can get. You know, I can't, like, I have no way of dealing with stealth. Like, I'm an entirely ranged game.
Snipe.
He's
guided fire.
Yeah, he's got all stealth heavies that are going to kill everything that I can, you know, everything that I love. And, like, it was just really bad. But there was actually a lot of value in playing that specific game. Like, because, I mean, there's nothing really on the line on a league. I mean, there was, you know, league points or whatever. So I felt, like, super stressed at the time. But, like, thinking back on it, there was, you know, nothing super on the line or whatever. But that game, like, certain things, that game, like, was really good for illustrating, like, certain things that I can apply really easily to a competitive game that actually happened, like, sort of all the time, like, in competitive games. Like, for instance, in that game, I have, like, a very specific game plan with my, like, Dire Troll Bomber, for instance. You know, my Dire Troll Bomber is going to get sniped from Gunnbjorn, and then I'm going to cast Guided Fire, and then it's going to throw two fully boosted POW 16s from 12 inches away and try and blow up a heavy before it can, you know, close into melee range. Like, that's what the whole purpose of the bomber in this list was at the time, you know? And then I'm looking at all stealth models across the table from me, and it's like, well, F, he can't do his, like, there's no purpose for this guy anymore. Like, he's literally purposeless now. So what do I do with, you know, I've got a 10-point paperweight. Like, what do I do with it now? And then you have to kind of think, you have to do these really weird, like, calculations, and you have to do these really weird, like, sort of gymnastics and sort of like, how do I get my points out of this guy now when he's just completely neutered, when his primary function is now not even on the table anymore. And so you start to think of weird things where it's like, I was playing against, I'm not going to say that, like, I'm a genius or whatever and, like, completely outplayed, like, someone. Like, I was playing against, you know, a relatively new player, and I was trying my best to make the best out of this bad situation. But it's like, I came up with stuff like, in that game, I led with, like, I had my Creelstone members, like, going up in front, and I was leading with them in hopes that, like, maybe he would charge in his heavies, and then I could set up, you know, to kill his heavies with mine in melee, even though they're not designed to do that. And just this is just like almost a hypothetical situation. But that happens all the time in competitive games where you sit down, you know, you've done your list selection at a tournament, and you sit down and you look across the table from you and you're like, well, because of the matchup, because of the caster, or because of a specific army choice that my opponent has taken, now I don't have my like planned purpose for X, Y, or Z models that I've taken. And so I need to figure out a better way. I need to figure out a way of using them that was actually not in the game plan at all for them, you know, and you need to try and figure out a way to, like, get those points. And you can actually get that experience, you know, that experience is really, really valuable if you can get that before the actual moment comes up. Like, if you've already, like, sort of primed it up, like, okay, I've seen this before. Like, in this situation, I need to actually lead with my support units to try and draw them in first so that I can, you know, charge them in, or, you know, something like that. Like, so yeah, I think there's definitely value in it.
I think another thing too is, if you ever get struck by inspiration, you should follow it. So, for example, just applying it to my own self, I played that game with Sword last week,
mm-hmm.
and he played his all the modulators list against my High Reclaimer list, and I've never had so much stuff killed in one turn by tramples when he was like Matt 12 power,
Matt 14.
Well, that was the last one.
It was like power, like
power 18 or something.
Something. It was auto killing.
Yeah, it was basically like, I miss on double ones and I auto kill things like, you know, paladins, exemplars, daughters of the flame,
or hawk. You
know. Yeah. But I was like, oh man, that inspired me. I need to pull a mon out and break synergy, because with Protectorate, our synergy chain starts at mat 8.
Yeah.
And starts at pow 12. You know, so I don't need to build near the synergy chain to get the similar results. I also have mobility, so my stuff's a little faster. And so it kind of inspired me. I'm like, holy crap. Synergy is so good in Protectorate. Like, that caster, I have to be able to do something to keep him alive, because that's the biggest trick. And I've come a long way in my own personal game, because I've been playing High Reclaimer for so long. And Kraos, actually, in a lot of ways, too, because he puts himself in harm's way to feet. I've gotten way better at protecting my caster. Like, just much better at it. And I wonder if I've gotten to the point where I can protect Amon well enough to utilize his benefits, which are synergy and mobility, and it would allow me to play that Jack Heavy list that I really want to play.
I think synergy might be my favorite spell in the whole game. Like, every time I see a synergy list in action, I'm just like, I want to play this list. Like, first it was Eviros and the Griffin Spam that I saw, and I was like, I am totally getting this list for Iron Gauntlet, like, before they changed Iron Gauntlet.
Yeah.
And then, like, watching, like, his Electro synergy list, I was like, I totally want to play this list. I wish Iron Gauntlet was like, I would play Eviral Syntharion synergy all day long.
But yeah, I think if you see something similar that inspires you, like another good example, watching Nigel run around with Alexia 2, I was like, I need to find a way to play that model. And I need to find a way to play that model with a control caster.
I actually picked her up, how to play her properly, I want to say from Colin. I can't remember. Like, my biggest beef with her.
God damn it.
I know. It's so weird. My biggest beef with her was, like, she was always behind. There's a game you play. She has to somehow get the souls up front and survive and then get going, and then she's unstoppable. And you just need some sort of function. And I was playing the perfect list for it. I was just being an idiot about it. I was actually using her also in Butcher 3.
Yeah.
And Butcher 3, just you think like, oh, I'm going to impending doom people and kill her, like drag people into her control or into her radius and then make those souls for her, and then she gets going. And that doesn't, it's not quite as effective. But yeah, having her just like run up, make three souls, she's armor 19, and they can suck on that. And then the next turn, the trains, it's like, wow. Like it's, yeah, anyways, it's fun to sort of get that practice. But seeing it, even just seeing it, like watching somebody else's game, you're just like, wait a second. And then practical application, like the light bulb goes off in your head.
And we're also making it sound like this is kind of stuff like, I just want to point this out, because we're making it sound like this is stuff that you should try in the safety of your own local game shop when there's nothing on the line and, you know, you shouldn't bring this stuff to a tournament. And we're not saying that at all. Like, at least I'm not getting that impression.
Turns out there's usually nothing on the line at tournaments either.
Right, exactly. And tournaments are also the best place for like a testing ground, because mm-hmm. you have the most like density of games
and the biggest
quality of players.
And a problem that you'll oftentimes have at the local game shop is you're playing people you've played a lot before. You're playing people who you've theory machined at, so they sort of know what's coming.
Right.
And you're also playing with people who may or may not be tailoring their lists to beat you.
Right. So, actually, that's a personal frustration of mine. Like, I cannot keep my mouth shut about something I'm excited about. So I always give you guys all kinds of prep for whatever I'm going to unleash, because I'll just be like, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this, and I think it's going to be sweet. And then you guys will, like, have already thought of all the counters in your head. Like, you'll just be like, okay, well, now I'm ready to play the game.
So that's the neat thing about tournament play, especially if you're going with something unorthodox, is that you'll see people that are unprepared for it. You'll see
it's the stuff you want to prey on. You're making a list to prey on specific animals, and it's a predictable meta. You know that the wildlife reserve is going to be stocked with all the right stuff, and you're going to go in there and just chow, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, you go to the old game store, and you're like, I'm going to play blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, you know, they think about it. Hmm. Well, I've always wanted to play Venithrax.
So my, I guess, not exactly a counterpoint, but I will speak for the other side here in that there is a great deal of value in playing what is considered good and what you know you've had success with in the past, and replaying a list, making small tweaks, like making small changes. And it's the difference between as you branch out and play new things, you gain a breadth of knowledge. When you play the same thing over and over again, you can gain a depth of knowledge. And in that, like, because I know now, like, different formations that Bane Knights can use against all sorts of different models. Like, I've played Bane Knights with Asphyxia so many times that I know when I need clouds and when I don't. I know when to, like, front load, so I run out, like, four Bane Knights out front. I know how many Bane Knights to run out in front based on what I'm fighting against and sort of sometimes who I'm fighting against. Like, how many is enough to make you think about shooting at them? How many is enough that you just won't shoot at them, so I'll get, like, three juicy charges? I know, like, how many Bile Thralls I need to expose so that somebody might bring models forward to try to shoot them back, but they won't be successful enough. I've played Asphyxia so many times, probably over 300 games in tournaments now, that I just have enough experience where I can look at pretty much any given situation and almost by muscle memory respond in a way that will improve the performance of every piece on the table. And that's what you gain in a depth of knowledge by replaying the same list, the same models over and over and over again. There's surprisingly always more to learn.
It's amazing how deep the game is. There's a lot of nuance.
And you can reach that point with analytical thinking when you're playing new models or playing a list you haven't played that much, but you won't be able to do it. A lot of times you won't be able to do it quickly enough in a tournament setting. So
when you guys play a new list, when do you find the greatest gain? So for me, I play a list one time. The second time I play it is a bazillion times better than the first time I play it.
Yeah, the leap between the first and second game is much greater than any other leap between any other series of games.
Right?
Yeah.
For me, the first time I play it is always, like, by far the best, and then after that, it's just completely downhill. I master it immediately. No, yeah, of course you play.
Yeah, it's just
of course you get better as you play.
It's an interesting how much you get better though from playing a list.
No, one to two is like a much bigger jump than like 2 to 3 or 3 to 4 or whatever the case may be.
One thing to John's, it's actually more of interesting, like, if you can ever convince your opponent to do it, is to play it and then just play it again right away. Like, just let's just even if you go to, like, the top of two, don't even finish the turn. Just, like, scoop the game and then redeploy and just do it again. Because a lot of times you make that realization, like, a lot of times your second game isn't, you don't get to use those same lessons because your opponent just changed to wildly different. So then you're like, oh, well, I was going up against this, like, Doom Reaver spam, and now I'm going up against the end line. You know, so you're, like, still kind of a fish out of the water.
Is that how you explain your three assassinations in a row at the hands of Shay?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I did try something different every time.
That's true.
I remember looking at that game and being like, I don't think he learned what the Commodore cannon did.
No, no, no.
Fire again!
I was just trying to get the like roll to go first. Plus one.
I so, get plus
so
one.
Repeat. I know.
So, so literally, you were playing at the shooting gallery, and
yeah.
Nigel was like one of the ducks.
Yeah.
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 You knocked him down yeah. three times in a row.
Just that particular series, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that definitely didn't happen in front of me.
Yeah. I don't know if it could have, because you would have just taken over and like... move the pieces for me. It's like, let's get him out of his hands. Like, throw him in the towel.
That's not true. I don't usually do that anymore. Thank you very much. I don't even kibitz. I walk by a game. I don't even say anything.
Uh-huh.
Remember how last week you were musing about how great it would be if you could take if you could have a Peace Orcia theme force that could take Renegades?
Yeah.
I think it'd be pretty sweet if there was a Troll theme force where you could take the Commodore cannon.
Yeah, yeah, I think it'd be pretty sweet if...
Trolls have many Commodore cannons.
Yeah, that, oh, and we will also have the real Commodore cannon.
There was a time.
I mean, the Thumper cannon is actually... Eric's been playing it in, like, every list lately. It's actually really effing annoying.
Mm-hmm.
The Thumper cannon?
It's, yeah.
They're not bad. They're just... It's that three-point slot that's really hard.
And it just keeps making me think. I'm like, all right, this Vanguard's here, but not at this angle in front of my caster, and, like, it's just...
Is the Thumper cannon AoE?
No, it's direct shot D3.
Bummer.
D3 slam on
yeah.
medium as
well. Well, you have to be within 2 inches for shield guard.
To bang shot it.
Hmm?
Be fun if you could bang shot it.
Explosivo.
You can bang shot it with Explosivo.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Gunboard for days!
Pretty bad, though. Pretty bad.
We call that turd polishing.
I mean, you can snipe it. Usually better.
Yeah, just throw on the old...
Impaler Animus.
The old snipe Animus. Far shot.
Yep. Mm.
Oh, times. Gunny, he's doing both.
Oh, my God.
Is he?
Yeah.
He's explosive.
So let me get this straight. Gunbjorn plus Thumper
just,
Cannon.
Just 4 Fury into the Thumper every day.
Plus Bank Shot mm-hmm. equals
plus snipe.
Profit.
Plus Snipe.
Yeah, plus Snipe. Why wouldn't you just use the War Wagon instead?
War Wagon sucks.
Does
so
it?
Many points. Thumper Cannon. OP.
I mean, maybe it's not... like the thing is, like... a range 18 rat 9 knockdown gun.
That's actually legit.
That
like,
might be worth testing out. Like this, this is the thing that we were just talking
about. Yeah, exactly.
About.
Right.
That might be worth testing out. Like that's like Iris.
Yeah.
Except also knocks you down.
Yeah.
Well,
and doesn't strip your focus.
Knocks you down.
Yeah.
That's like Iris. I'm like, no, it's actually nothing like Iris at all.
I mean, the Rat 9.
The Rat 9.
Yeah, Rat 9.
Rat 9 that enables follow-up kill to your caster.
And range 18 that's is like actually Iris. Pretty similar to her 19-inch threat range.
Also, in SR 2014, there's that scenario where you get boosted damage rolls. Oh, my God, legit.
I know.
Exactly. OP. Which I've been abusing, and it's hilarious.
And you could take 2 Thumper Cannons. That's like having 2 Irises.
That's true.
It just that's, you know, infinity... Fury to do all of that stuff on 2 of them.
Yep.
If it exists. If it kills your opponent, then it's worth Infinity Fury.
Well, the thing is, you don't have Infinity. That's fine.
It's fine. It's fine.
Wait, what? That's not my experience with Hordes. They have however much Fury they want.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to wrap us up for today.
Hold on. Before you do that.
All right.
I did want to thank Sword for guest hosting and playing the game with me at 1 o'clock, 1:30 in the morning.
Yeah. Raising the stakes.
Also, I'd like to congratulate Ryan Chiriboga for winning the Phoenix Open.
Congratulations, Ryan.
Yes.
Congratulations, Ryan. He deserves it.
He does. He's a
good player. He's a good player.
That's all for us tonight. Do you guys have any store updates? I see some things I haven't seen before up there. I just don't know if you've talked about them.
Walls on the store.
Yeah, walls in the store. I think we said like the last 2 weeks in a row. But anyways, they are literally going in the mail to the store, and then they'll be available.
Sweet.
We'll be at the WTC.
Sweet.
More new products on the way.
Expect videos. Yeah. Everyone should vote on who's...
By the time you're listening to this, we'll be
actually,
at the
I guess
WTC.
You don't, really. I was going to be like, people
it'll
should vote on
air.
Who they want to see, but you won't.
That's right.
By the time you listen to this, they'll they'll be in the store, probably. Yeah.
Potentially, yeah. I guess I should probably make those slugs. Also, if you had any problems with the store in the past with the cart, I got all of those issues resolved. So we were having some weird things going on with the online store with the cart where it would not display item quantities or allow you to edit your cart. All that's fixed.
It's pretty scrubbed here, John.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I...
Damn it.
It was
he's
actually...
He's a casual store owner.
Yeah. It was a little bit tricky to track down. It took me many hours and a lot of hair pulling, but it's all resolved.
Awesome.
So...
Oh, and a side note, if you have an 11-year-old, Squirrel or Die is apparently like the 11-year-old, 12-year-old wheelhouse game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Brendan loves it, and he had his buddies over the other day.
And they were literally, like, squealing. Like, and they even cheated. Like, they just made up their own rules, like, immediately, which is awesome to see, like, you know, social engineering. the way the game's played is you have, like, four tiles in the middle, and then you have, like, a stack of tiles, and each person has three in their hand. And you draw a tile, you place it face up on the board, and then you pick one of the ones in your hand. I'm not going to go into too deep. And you replace it, and they were just like... You do this over and over and over until you have a 5x5 board. And then you pick them like memory, but it's like Russian roulette. Like, you'll kill yourself as you pick the wrong tiles. Mm-hmm. They immediately are like, screw all that drafting and, like, the building and the strategy. And they would just, like, randomly make a 5x5. Like, they would take all the tiles, put them face down, and, like, smush them all over the place, make a 5x5, and then just start playing Russian roulette. And then they were, like, screaming wildly, like they were underground gambling, you know, like, oh! It was amazing.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
The game's actually really fun. Yeah.
So if you want to teach your 11-year-old to play Russian roulette.
Yeah, that's basically
squirrel that.
That's all for us at Mies on Minis here this evening. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, our own website. Continuous updates, good times. We will be back next week, maybe?
You guys have to record without me, probably, unless we do it on Tuesday, and then I'm not sure I'll be up for it because I fly back on Monday, and I may be jet-lagged all to hell. All
right.
But we'll have an episode next
week. We'll figure something out.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So that's all for us tonight. This is Keith.
Josh.
Chad.
John.
Nigel.
That's a good one.
Thanks for tuning in. What should we pre-ramble about?
Twisted Metal?
Oh, yeah. Twisted Metal is legit.
That game's awesome.
You guys for not the PlayStation?
For the PS3, yeah.
Is like...
I was talking about PS1.
It's like the game is like 15 years old.
Yeah, that's also what I was thinking.
I don't know what the new version... It's the latest. It's old. It's a PS3 game. Yeah. But it's not Twisted Metal Black, which was...
Yeah, it's after Twisted Metal Black.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
But they've kind of done a nice service. It's kind of like Twisted Metal 2. And so me and Fox and Colin were playing it yesterday. I like went down to a Gamers and just bought a bunch of used games. And that was just sort of like the revelation of the day. I was like, oh my God. But the big thing is like this kick-ass soundtrack. It's got like Sammy Hagar and like Metallica and just all kinds of like massive crunchy butt rock that like plows through the speakers and like gets you excited about driving around and ramming stuff.
Nice.
It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, Nigel, actually, I was watching him play. He was driving this thing called the Juggernaut, which is this big semi with a trailer that is not maneuverable at all. And he was accidentally killing people because he would like go up a hill and then start sliding down. And then people would just run into him and then die.
Yeah, they would just die touching me. Like, and then I got like 4 kills. Like, yeah, take that. And it was just weird. And I had no idea what I was doing. I was just trying to like...
just trying to drive up a hill, but he got off to an angle and he started sliding down the hill and like would bump somebody and then they would explode.
Yeah. Isn't the semi... I remember the semi being like the boss.
Darkseid is the boss in the norm... he's also one of the bosses in like the very first one. But Darkseid also, when he was just a regular semi... His whole thing is he would, like, blow the truck horn and then, like, ram you, and it would just do, like, colossal damage. The Darkseid in this one, he's literally unsteerable. Like, you can't play him functionally. Like, he just drives around at about 40 miles an hour, and if something runs into him, then great, but, yeah, it's terrible.
I always played as Mr. Grimm. Was Mr. Grimm in this one?
Oh, yeah.
The motorcycle?
The motorcycle? Yeah, he's in there. He's the one everybody's like, oh, Mr. Grimm. They try to hunt him down and kill him right away because he's so squishy.
If you can
ram him about once and unload your guns, he's done.
But he's so maneuverable. That was the fun part.
And his special is huge damage.
Yeah, amazing damage. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, Fox is playing this silly cop car SUV thing with a turret.
And is like, it like it's like a Hummer or?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he just would not give it up because he kept doing well with it.
Yeah.
So we never played anything else the entire night.
It had, like, great armor, okay damage, okay speed.
Yeah.
And it was enough to just sort of keep him. And in Fox is very deliberate when he plays. He just runs around getting weapons and health, you know, so he's constantly healing himself.
Yeah.
The funnest part of the night, though, was I finally was, like, after 2 hours of, like, Sammy Hagar butt rock, I was like, you actually get kind of sick. Like, you know, you just, it's almost like you get motion sickness almost. Like, I'm going to puke. And then... I handed it off to Colin, and he started playing, and Colin was like, he played the helicopter right away and immediately started poning Air Fox. Like, I was like, Fox, you have to play the helicopter, because it's like a handicap, because me and Fox are playing it earlier, and it's like really difficult. And
I had no idea there was a helicopter. That seems super cheaty.
It's super cheaty, but like, me and Fox are terrible at it, because we'd fly up high enough, and then like all the bots just shoot missiles at you, and you're dead like immediately.
Oh, okay.
And so we were like, this thing's stupid, and we stopped playing it. I'm like, Fox, you have to play the helicopter. So Fox played the helicopter, died immediately, and it was like, I'm going back to my little police mobile. And I was like, Fox, you have to play the helicopter. You know, like, we had to like shame him back into not being a douche. And Colin, in the meantime, decided to play the helicopter, and for some reason he was like, a savant at it, and he was just wrecking the board. Like, he was just killing Fox repeatedly, and like Fox would get back in the helicopter. Like, then it got personal. Like, Fox would just get in the helicopter and purposely try to just hunt Colin down immediately, but Colin would just like smoke him. He would like, you know, it was amazing. He had like these crazy weird helicopter skills, and also that he could fly around and not get killed by the board, whereas like me and Fox, we couldn't prevent that ever. So like, yeah, it was phenomenal. I was having such a good time with that. Just watching Fox get beat by Colin there.
I mean, watching Colin do well at anything is always, it's just like a moment of pride.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You're just like, oh, our prodigal son.
Baby's growing up.
Yeah. Yep.
It's like the last 5 minutes of Rudy when they're up by 62 million points. And they're just like, get in there, 5-2 guy. And then he goes out there and gets crushed on one play. And then they're like, yeah. Validates all the crap I took for 4 years.
I don't like that at all.
But I don't know. I feel like that.
I cry every time.
Like, if you just read the synopsis of Rudy, it's actually just offensive. Like,
yeah, why? That's super bad.
That is not motivational in any way. Like, that does not inspire me. Like, I'm a human victory cigar. That was my lot in college.
I mean, it's the story of corporate America. Where it,
corporations never do that. You never at McDonald's.
You literally show up every day and each every day and somehow manage to not kill yourself, eventually, at the end, you get a gold watch and retire.
Maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
Or maybe, like, your company gets sold and then you have to start all over again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At Blizzard, you get a shield and a sword.
Oh, that's... Is the sword sharp enough to cut your own throat?
Yeah, it's a real shield and a real sword.
That's good.
Whoa. Yeah.
That's good.
It's like their 20-year anniversary or something like that.
So you have something to fall on.
Speaking of Blizzard, I must have been living under a rock. Chad just told me today that they're doing a live-action Warcraft movie.
Mm-hmm. I was unaware of this.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about that.
Next year, I think.
Just tell me The Rock isn't in it.
No, but it had a decent... I need to look it up.
Amazing.
It's one of those few movies you'd want to see him in.
You think so?
I would absolutely go see it if The Rock was in it.
If he's the main guy, like, if he's carrying, like, a crappy cast of unknowns, then yeah, it's going to be bad. But if he's, like, you know, rocking it with Vin Diesel and some bunch of other dudes.
How many members of the guild cast are in the movie?
The guild cast? Oh, I wish all of them probably
this is not an encouraging cast list thus far.
Uh-oh.
I remember...
All right, lay it on me.
Give me the highlights.
Dominic Cooper.
Who's that?
Dominic Cooper is the bad guy from The Bourne Identity, and he's also the neighbor in American Beauty where he kills Kevin Spacey at the end.
Okay.
That guy's actually a decent actor.
Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
That's not one of his highlights, but... You know. Yeah.
That guy can act, though.
Clancy Brown.
That guy's legit. That's the Kurgan.
Is that the Kurgan?
That's the Kurgan?
Yep.
I love that guy.
Oh, boy. This is shaping up to be an
He was also movie. The guy from Shawshank Redemption, the stupid prison guard. He was good in that.
He was also in Starship Troopers.
Yeah.
Yes, he was.
Paula Patton.
Who's that?
She was in Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol.
She's Robin Thicke's wife, and they're now divorced, and then he wrote an album called Robin, which is, you know, awkward.
Yeah.
Travis
to get her back.
Gimmel,
is that really,
who has been in nothing good at
true?
All.
Yeah, it's totally true. It's Robin Thicke's wife. What's that?
Why would any woman ever go anywhere near Robin Thicke is what I want to know.
They were actually high school sweethearts. Yeah. But then when she saw him basically banging what's-her-face Miley Cyrus on stage, she was like,
I cannot bring a child into this home, that kind of thing.
Ben Foster.
Ben Foster's legit.
He was... He was the guy in 310 to Yuma. He was amazing in that. And then he was also in...
He's playing Medivh, so he better have a kick-ass voice.
The guy
voice.
In 310 to Yuma was Russell Crowe, right?
Yeah, no, he was the guy...
No, I'm pretty sure it was Christian Bale.
Or Christian Bale.
No,
it was
Russell Crowe.
Was it Russell? It was Russell Crowe,
no,
right?
But Ben Foster was the one that played his second-in-command.
It was Russell Crowe and Christian Bale. Fantastic. Fantastic. So who was he in 310 to Yuma?
He was like... The second in command in Russell Crowe's gang. He was really, really good in it.
Yeah, and he's playing Medivh, who's like probably the main character.
Probably? Which one's Medivh?
The dude that turns into a raven and says cryptic things and flies away.
He's the guardian of Tears Fall that, like, he's actually originally, before he, like, dies, he's the guy that contacts the orcs and gets them to build the dark portal to come and.
Okay.
Who's writing it? Who's directing it? What studio is filming it?
Please say Uwe Boll.
Director Duncan Jones.
Don't know him.
Famous for Moon, Source Code,
Moon was
and
good.
Moon Whistle.
Was good.
I never saw Moon, but I heard things.
Yeah.
Writer also Duncan Jones. Charles Leavitt, and others.
I mean, it's not necessarily bad for the writer to also direct.
Mm-hmm. If he wrote Moon, then he might be good at that, too.
I mean, I feel like it should be a Wachowski brother movie.
Aren't they just the Wachowski siblings now? Isn't one of them a woman?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that happened?
Yes.
Oh.
Well, I also thought it was Wachowski.
Whatever.
I would say Wachowski, too. But I don't know.
It's a Polish name. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's a made-up word. Who cares?
Wazachowski?
Yeah.
Wazalewski?
They could release a pronunciation guide at the beginning of their next book.
Whoa, checks.
Speaking of, anybody...
Here's the thing, though, is that I have faith that this movie will be good, because if it's not good, we won't have to ever see it, because Blizzard will actually literally just axe it.
Yeah.
If they have
because
control.
That's what they do. Like, yeah, even dude. If they're going to be like, You know, they're going to have some movie studio that's going to be like, we spent $800,000 billion producing this movie. Like, we have to release it now. Blizzard will just be like, here's $800,000 billion. Don't release it.
Like, it depends on how much control they have, right? They might have just been like, here's the movie rights to our...
Chris Metzen is one of the producers, so I assume that they have as much control as they need.
I don't know who Chris Metzen is.
He's like the Warcraft guy.
That's what they call him, the Warcraft guy?
Yeah.
The Warcraft Whisperer?
Is he like... Never mind.
Oh. In October, the next Borderlands game is coming out.
The prequel, right?
The pre-sequel.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's in between the other two Borderlands games. After the first one, before the second one.
I see.
Yep.
And I'm super excited. The characters look awesome. One of them is Claptrap. And his action skill is he, quote-unquote, analyzes the battlefield and then deploys the most useful of the action skills of all of any of the Borderlands characters that have ever been, including like a couple random ones of his own, and then he has a couple that are just detrimental to the entire party. Like one of them that basically just turns you all into bouncy balls.
That's pretty legit.
So you're trying to fight, except you're bouncing all over the field because of stupid Claptrap, which is pretty accurate to having Claptrap attempt to help you.
I mean, literally every game of Borderlands 2, the pre-sequel, is going to be just like five Claptraps.
No, I'm playing the Sheriff. Sheriff looks legit.
Okay.
Is there a girlfriend character that I could play with you guys?
I didn't see one immediately.
I mean, there's no way of knowing until the game comes out if one is, like, easy and OP, right?
Right, yep.
So...
Actually, that's kind of offensive.
Yeah.
You may as well just be Claptrap.
Yeah, I was thinking about it, too, but I was just like, eh. Like, I don't really think John can be Todd at this point, so, yeah. He's pretty stuck in his ways. Although
I learned the term from Keith.
He did recognize that. Well, Keith has always been offensive, but you did recognize that it was offensive, so maybe you are learning, actually.
Yeah.
Good job, John.
My apologies if I offended anyone.
Gage was the best, though. Borderlands 2.
I actually wonder how many female followers we have. Do you think we have any?
If we had more than five, I would be extremely, extremely surprised.
But I do think it's around five.
I think five is pretty accurate.
Okay.
So I'm excited for Borderlands. It's a game that I have a group of friends that plays. So.
Mm-hmm.
And we sort of tapered off and haven't been... We don't really have a game right now.
Like, do you guys PC it, PS3 it, or PS4 it?
PC.
Okay, PC.
Because I sort of bounced off Path of Exile. I've never really gotten into it. I've tried a bit, but I also just have kind of limited video game time these days.
Well, Chad and I and extraneous others will soon be gauntleting.
I gauntleted for 2 hours yesterday.
How was it?
It was fun.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that there is going to be... I'm not... sure how much single player playability there is, like how fun it's going to be single player.
Yeah, I wouldn't
player.
Play
in
it
previous titles of Gauntlet, zero.
But with four people or three other people, I guess, like it was pretty fun. Most of the areas that we were in were pretty samey, but they do a good job. Like it's kind of Gauntlet, so you don't really care. Like it's just like, are there zombies? Are there a lot of zombies? Good. I'm happy. And then there's like some every other level. They do these, they have death come in, and I don't know how familiar you guys are with Gauntlet or whatever, but like
quite.
You know, it's like the big Grim Reaper guy, and he would just come and like suck your life force out, and in prior games you could just kill him with magic, like with potions or whatever. In this game, he's literally just like an unkillable, like unstoppable, like death machine. Like he just like appears, and then just like drills towards the nearest person, and like when he touches them, they just instantly vaporize. And the entire point of, like, death levels is they're, like, all procedurally generated, and you're just, like, running from him. And, like, eventually,
that's
like...
pretty sweet.
Yeah, and, like, eventually, like, you get into... And, like, eventually you get into, like, puzzle rooms or, like, fight rooms where, like, four monster spawners will spawn up. And then you have to, like, kill these monster spawners that are spawning, like, you know, a zillion zombies. And also death will, like, randomly appear and start chasing you around for, like, a set amount of time before... And then he'll disappear if he doesn't... He'll either disappear after he kills somebody... Or he'll disappear after, like, a certain amount of time, and then he'll come back after, like, you know, a little bit of time has passed or whatever. So, like, there's this constant pressure.
That actually seems sweet.
It was super, like, it sounds so, like, it just sounds so dumb and formulaic to describe it to people, but, like, when you're actually playing it, it's freaking hilarious.
Yeah.
Because you're just like, and then, because they do this, they do the gauntlet, it's kind, this is actually kind of annoying, but it's also kind of funny. I'm not sure if I would get eventually, like, too frustrated with this, or if it would just continue to be hilarious, but they, like, strictly adhere to the old, like, arcade style viewing system where, like, all four of the guys have to be on the same, like, have to be on the screen at the same time.
Yeah.
So the screen kind of wraps to, like, whoever's farthest out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it doesn't, like, keep expanding. Like, there's, like, a finite amount of, like, space that it can expand to. And once it gets to that point, like, you're literally just running up against, like, an invisible wall. And there's times where, like, I would, like one time, like, I went back into a room because I was like, no, there's gold back in here. And, you know, it's, like, it's kind of, it's, I'm calling it, when I describe it to people, co-op with heavy air quotations.
Yeah.
Because it's co-op. Like, if you all, if all four of you die, like, it's game over. Like, you, you have to start the level over again. But it's also gauntlet, and you're scored on how much gold you pick up and how many monsters you kill.
Mm-hmm.
And the game is really, really, really... That game, like, puts that score, like, super huge in the forefront, like, at the end of every level. And it's basically just like, you're awesome! You won! Everyone else is terrible.
Yeah.
And, like, when you're playing with three other people, like, of course, you know, the talking just...
So we can't play with John.
No, it would actually be incredible.
Because John's going, like, to naturally be horrible at the game.
Well, also, like, this is one of the situations where, like, raising the stakes is actually just awesome. You know what I mean?
Nigel, sing the song.
Was that? Oh, yeah.
Raising the stakes, being a douchebag.
There's, like, a crown that you can get, and it's just, it just randomly spawns on a level, from what I understand, and then it just sits on top of your character's head until you get hit, and then it flies off, and it, like, goes, sits, and it just, like, flies off, and it's just, like, landing in, like, this random portion of the room, and someone else can go and pick it up. And all it does, like, it literally does nothing. Except that at the end of the level, whoever had the crown gets, like, a bonus amount of points. And it's, like, a very significant bonus, to the point that, like, three or four times we had finished levels and, like, it counts up your score, you know, like, a bit at a time. It's like, gold score, kill score. And I'm like, yeah, I'm in the lead. And then it's like, crown bonus. Damn it! No! Like, even though the score is, I mean...
Irrelevant.
It's pretty, like, it's meaningless, but it's like...
But yeah.
You want to rub it in.
Yeah.
You know, if you win. Like,
sounds incredible.
That's the whole point. It's, I don't know, I was having a lot of fun with it. Yeah. Like, a lot of fun with it.
We should stream some Gauntlet. I think that might be pretty fun, entertaining.
It could be fun.
Yeah.
Could be fun.
But yeah, I don't know how much... I literally only played it for, like, 2 hours.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much, like, I don't know if it goes the distance or whatever. But even so, like, it's only $15 like, if you do the 4-pack on Steam. And, like, I think I could easily get another, like, five or six hours more enjoyment out of this game.
Yeah.
And that would like, already just be worth the, like, it's basically, it's almost already worth, like, the $15 just in, like, the 2 hours that I played.
Yeah.
Like, so, yeah, it's good. You guys should.
Hmm. I did love the N64 and then the PlayStation 2 Gauntlets that came
out. Yeah, Gauntlet Legends was...
Gauntlet Legends and then Dark amazing. Legacy. So good.
I never played any of those. I played Gauntlet.
Yeah.
That's the only one I've played is the original Gauntlet.
I never actually played the original Gauntlet, but I had Gauntlet 2 for my NES. And me and a buddy of mine, like, when we were in high school and elementary school, like, we would literally play that game... For, like, one time we got to, like, level 150, I think, which is just, like, literally playing the game for, like, 15 hours straight. Like, it's just ridiculous. Yeah. Good times. Good times. I love all of the, like, crazy, like, stupidity that happens just by putting, like, something so arbitrary as points on the line.
Yeah.
Like, anytime you get hit, the crown goes flying off your head and it just, like, goes and, like, sits in this random corner of the room or whatever. And... There were so many times where we would be, like, fighting an objective, and then it would be, like, one more hit to kill this, like, zombie spawner, and then someone would get hit and the crown would go flying, and, like, literally everyone in the party would just stop attacking the zombie spawner and just, like, go beelining for the crown, like, oh! And then it would spawn a bunch of monsters and kill us. And it's just like, damn it. But it's so... I don't know. It's so good.
Yeah.
Or, like, there's this weird... disconnect between, like, you can still shoot, like, you can shoot the food in this game, you know, and just kill it in case someone needs it. But, like, if they die and they can't... If they die and, like, causes you to eventually fail the level, like, it's bad for you. So you actually, so you kind of want to help them, like, a little bit. But, like, not too much. Like, it's just... It's funny. I don't know.
Sounds a lot like Cutthroat Caverns.
Yeah.
But
I like it.
All this gauntlet talk is making me a little bit nostalgic for older video games. Any of you guys ever play, like, Herzog's Why?
No.
Never even heard of it? Probably
nope.
Not.
I've heard of it.
I played on the Genesis, and it was amazing. It was, you basically flew around in a little, like, Vertec fighter from Robotech, and you could transform into a robot, or you could fly around. And when you were in flight mode, you could pick up, basically you built, like, tanks, different kinds of tanks and supply vehicles and stuff, and you set a caravan at your opponent's base, and then you could, like, pick up stuff and move it around or whatever. and then you obviously could fight things. But if people would buy, like, they had these jeeps with rockets on them. So you'd be like, uh-oh. You couldn't get too close to their caravan because all these rockets would be coming in. But the game was amazing. I played it on the Genesis, and I'm probably not describing it very well. But if you've ever played it, it's one of those games that it sounds stupid and it looks really dumb, but you just play it for hours and hours and hours. It's a lot like Gauntlet in that way. We spent that.
Yeah, I get so nostalgic for classic, like, old-school games. I was actually watching someone stream Shadowgate just yesterday. I don't know if you guys remember that game. It was an NES game. It was like a point-and-click, like, NES adventure. And the only reason it's, like, popular again right now is because they just remade it from a Kickstarter with, like, new improved graphics or whatever and put it up on Steam. And so it's been getting kind of hyped. But, like, the remake is just straight terrible. Like, it's just... Like, the art and the graphics and everything are really, like, good, but they really... like, were completely married to their old school feel for the game. And so they, like,
a
lot of...
interface to be really clunky.
Yeah, it's... They, like, went as far as possible into, like, because there was a lot of... there were all these things that, like, the NES interface did that it had to because it's an NES game. And then they just, like, straight up copied that, like, for this new one, even though it's, like, a PC game with, like, really, really good graphics, because they're just like, you know, yeah, we want it to be nostalgic. It's like, that's actually just bad game design. But, you know, they wouldn't have done this on the NES game if they didn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
But, and it's just funny. So,
there's actually a lot of that. Steam is actually sort of like this wasteland of games where it's like buying a game on, like, the Android market. Like, you just don't know what you're getting. It's like, and you can tell what their influences are, so you buy it, and you're like, oh, that might be missed. Yeah. And there's no way to tell until you wasted $15.
And that's one of the, what Chad's talking about there is sort of one of the criticisms that comes up about Steam, Greenlight, or Kickstarter, is that it's, in some ways, there's a danger of it just becoming this giant circle jerk of nostalgia and, like, remakes.
Because
people are never as excited about, like, something new as they are about... something they love being, like, updated.
I don't know. I don't think that that's true. I don't think that that's ever something that's going to be, like, a real concern. There's too many new and innovative, like, game makers who don't want to just... Like, there's definitely people that want to cash in on nostalgia, like, and that's always just going to be true. But I don't think that's ever going to be the driving force behind, like, people not wanting to do new things.
I don't mind, like, going down memory lane and revisiting some of those old games, especially with, like, a new skin. In fact, that's one of my beefs of, like... Final Fantasies or some of the other games. It's like, just give us awesome graphics and then repeat the same equation. Most people would be super thrilled. And then they never do that. They, like, crap on your chest. But this, like, with Steam, the big problem is these crappy developers that when you buy it, it's barely playable and, like, crashes. And then your computer tries to uninstall it. And it's like, what the hell happened?
You just wouldn't buy those games. Like, you can, because the thing about Steam, like, Greenlight, and for a lot of those beta access games and early access stuff, is that, like, you have to do a lot of, like, you have to do a little bit of research, I think, to get into those, like, and read the reviews.
The reviews are helpful. I almost bought, like, a Fallout 2, it was like a Fallout 2 remake, I can't remember what the heck it's called, but...
Wasteland,
yeah, and then just all the reviews are just like, do not buy this game.
Yeah.
And
Marshall is flipping out about how excited he is that this game got made.
Is he?
Yeah, because he loved Fallout Tactics.
They're just saying it's unplayable garbage. But I got stung by, there was one that got decent ratings, and it's a remake of an old game in the 90s called Stars, and it was like a play-by-mail, play-by-email game, and it was very long. It took these, like, you explored the galaxy, and you explored planets, and you met aliens, and did all this weird stuff, and you built, like, a civilization.
Oh my god, play-by-mail games.
Yeah.
These guys don't have any idea what that is.
Yeah, I know. They were,
but, actually.
But it was a play-by-mail game that got turned into, like, a CD-ROM, like, computer game. But the computer game was amazing because you played by email, and it was just super fun. So I always want one that's, like, super crunchy because, like, the book on it was, like, 3 inches thick, and it was just crazy. Like, you could just – the stuff you could do making all your ships. But anyways, I bought this stupid game. It's terrible. The graphics are bad. The graphics are in a lot of ways worse than the old one, because at least the old one was just, like, dots and, like, lines and stuff and, like, vectors. And this one's just, like, really crappy graphics. And then it's just buggy, and nothing works, and you can't automate, like, any of your planets or anything. It's just, like, a miserable piece of crap game. So anyways, like, that one stung me. Or I get stung on, like, Resident Evil. Like, apparently, like, when I last played Resident Evil, there's been, like, 10 more Resident Evils.
Yeah.
You can't just go...
No.
Can't trust that name.
No.
Can't just go and randomly buy Resident Evil.
Yeah, Resident Evil 6 has been pretty universally panned.
Mm.
Is that the one you're talking about?
No, I'm talking about Revelations.
Oh, okay.
I skip 6 because they're like, this is just a crappy action game. I'm like, well, maybe Revelations. That's got, like, some lukewarm reviews. No. But
is Revelations the one that was basically just one long QuickTime game? Is that... One of them was just, like, so packed with QuickTime events that
yeah.
It was... Like, probably one of the most boring games I've ever played. I can't remember which one it was, but...
I think all I know is the last Resident Evil I remember people saying was good was 4, and that one was... That's pretty old.
I actually enjoyed the heck out of 5.
Okay.
What's that?
I just said 4, yeah. I was agreeing that 4 was quite a while ago.
There's a genre of game that kind of died that was my favorite, or one of my favorites. You know, there's, like, RPGs, and there's real-time strategy, and real-time strategy kind of killed the turn-based strategy games.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of miss those, because some of those are really fun.
There's still
RTS
there.
Or turn-based?
Turn-based.
Yeah, I miss turn-based.
Yeah.
Like Civilization still exists.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we used to play Heroes of Might and Magic.
Oh, man. Heroes. Well, that still exists. The new one came out, and Marshall played it, and he didn't hate it. But I looked at it, and I wasn't super thrilled. Like, yeah. Heroes of Might and Magic, my opinion, hasn't been sweet since 3.
Is 3 the one where they first started you getting heroes? I think that's where you started getting the heroes.
I don't know.
Also, have any of you guys ever played Master of Monsters?
No.
No? Mm. Dark Wizard? No? Master of Monsters was amazing. It was a game, I think it came from Japan, that was translated poorly, so it was hilarious. So you'd summon, like, yeah, everybody played a different type of summoner that could summon different kinds of monsters, and it was just a turn-based hex map kind of game where you tried to kill each other. Mm. But instead of rocks, you'd summon locks, gorums instead of golems. but what was cool is as you went through battles, different monsters were better against different things, and then they would get levels. And so you're always trying to, like, level up your guys and keep them alive, but not commit them into too hairy situations because your opponent would be like, well, that's a level 3 monster. If I get rid of that, it's a huge blow. So it was pretty crazy, but it was a great game. And all the different... types of summoners, you know, there's like an undead summoner. And
I bet I would have loved this game as a kid.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah,
and we used to play multiplayer all the time, and on the Genesis, and it was just awesome. Summon dragons. Everybody would have different types of dragons, so that was cool. You get a dragon leveled up, you're like, yeah, and then people would hunt them down, and you'd be like, no. And then they came out with Dark Wizard, which was, I don't even know if they were related, but it had the same mechanics, but it was a single player, like, campaign game, and it was amazing. That came out on Sega CD, I think.
You had a Sega CD?
Yeah.
Wow. Do you guys remember the Sega Channel?
Mm-mm.
Oh, man, it was...
Vaguely, yes.
Totally crazy. Because this was, like, back before the internet was even, like, a real thing, like, that people had. But it was like you could subscribe to a channel where they would, like, basically send you a selection of, like, random Sega games, like, every week or month or something like that. And then you could, like, choose from this big list of Sega games and, like, play from, like, basically just play them, like, through the cable.
That's crazy.
It was totally crazy. Like, it was so weird. I remember I wanted it so bad when I was a kid, but, you know, we couldn't afford it. Or my parents rather didn't want to.
Yeah. Sega.
Yeah. Anyway.
The only Sega system I ever owned was the Dreamcast.
Ooh, rough. That's pretty rough.
It was so good. That system was brilliant.
No, the Dreamcast was genius. It was
ahead of its time.
It was like 10 years ahead of its time.
It was an ass kicker.
Like, it was basically an Xbox or it was, yeah, it was basically like an Xbox 360, like 6 years before the Xbox 360 came out, and before there was any infrastructure to support it whatsoever.
Yeah. I remember I hooked that up to our dial-up internet.
Yeah.
And played some Phantasy Star online.
Oh, man, the Phantasy Star franchise.
I tried to get back into it, like, years later, and I was like, I'm going to go buy a Phantasy Star game. And I went into the game store, and I was like, this is a Phantasy Star game. I'd like to buy this, please. Is this like all the other Phantasy Stars? And the guy at the GameStop was like, yeah, of course it is. And I got it, and it was like a Phantasy Star card game. And I was like, what the crap is this?
It's like all the other Phantasy Star card games.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then I didn't. And then I didn't get back into it. So that's the end of that story.
Phantasy Star is the only game that's ever made me buy a guidebook to get, like, I think it was Phantasy Star 2. Because we were just so stuck.
Well, there's a lot of, like, underhanded bullcrap that they would do to you in that game that I remember. Because, like, in PSO, like, at least they told you, but when you named your character, you got, like, a drop set, like, based on the name of your character. Like, these kind of things will drop more commonly for you. And you're like...
What?
You're like, ugh.
No.
And they told you what it did, but it was actually kind of easy to miss because it was just sort of a symbol. And, like, you had to... Yeah, it was dirty. So you, like, make a character, and, like, the characters each have a very specific, like, type of skill set that they're good with. Like, if you make an android, which can't use the magic, and you accidentally name your character one of the ones that just, like, all the spells drop for you, it's going to be crappy.
Yeah. Oh, Japan and esoteric BS.
Yeah, I miss those Phantasy Star games. Another really... Anybody played Warsong? Probably not.
Warsong Gulch?
No.
It was like, WSG.
Warsong was, again, hex-based, but it's a lot like... Final Fantasy Tactics, so you probably would have really liked it. But it was,
for sure, I would have.
You got heroes that you leveled up that had different skills that they gained, and you fought on maps and killed stuff.
Awesome.
What's our number?
192.
Yep. 192.
192.